I like the sign that was, I forget what place it was, but like if you go past Tonic, like towards Fernando's, one of the shops says like, "Welcome back, furries. We missed you." And I'm just like, "Oh my god, that's so good!" Like I loved it. Like,
I just found it very intriguing to see you had the Tonic menu, which had "Gift Me Very Hard," right. And everyone was just going, "Don't you know we don't use that word anymore?" And then you go a little bit further down, and you saw one of the lounges say "Fursuits Welcome," and I said, "Thank you for getting the lingo right."
I ordered that drink, and I'm just like, I'll just get the very hard drink, please. I don't even want to say the whole thing.
I just like the big sign. I was like, Tonic Pause Freeze. Yes. I was like, that's commitment to customers. And somebody was like, what do you tip for that?
AnthroCon 2015, and this is our Fangs and Fonts After Hours show. And I'm Ocean, and we have other guests.
Not Ice Day Spring.
Rob.
I'm Rikoshi. Hi.
Fugue.
Slipwolf.
Mog Moogle.
And some other people might show up. We'll see. So, guys, how was the con?
I had a blast. I really needed this vacation. It's been really cool.
Oh, yeah. Best con I've ever been to, for sure.
For me, it was one of the quickest cons, but that's because I was stuck behind the Sofa Wolf table almost the entire time. I got to see the last booths in the dealer's den 40 minutes before it all shut down. I never saw the art show. I never saw Artisan.
To be fair, I forgot that was all there on the other side. And it was like, oh, the dealer's den's closing in like 20 minutes. And I was looked over. I'm like, oh, there's an art show. And oh, it's, oh.
I made the time. I had to realize I had to go over there.
Sneak a peek.
How did you guys feel the con was from a writing perspective?
I think we did better than past years. The panels have gotten definitely, and compared to, I think we're getting more of them. It's still a very push through lots of them at one time. So it's a bang, bang, bang thing.
On the plus side, there was less overlap this year, I feel, than in other years. I feel like a lot of times people will submit panel ideas that are like pretty similar, and they'll still be two separate panels, and like, I don't know, I think keeping them more discreet is good.
There was also some gaps, which is nice. People don't need to be in there all day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They were all well and kind of well and consistently attended.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah, it was,
there were a number of panels that were packed. The science fiction panel.
I was surprised how full our science fiction was.
Yeah,
was
bursting to the seams. The what was the one last night? The after hours.
Can you read it?
Oh, the bad erotica.
That was awesome.
I didn't stay to attend that, but when I was out of that room, there was standing room only in that.
We turned it into something sort of Rocky Horror picturesque.
Oh, yeah.
We had hand signals.
Yeah, because we were starting to keep totals of, like, anytime someone said yo. And then we're like, he gave up counting, so we're like, hey, anytime someone says yo, we'll all do this. And we do the gang
just,
sign.
Just bound with the gang sign.
And
yeah.
So the audience just got
for those
right
of you who
it.
Are listening at home, like three people in the circle mimed the gang sign on an audio podcast.
Yes.
Hey, you can hear the sound if you do it hard enough.
Right, but they can't hear the peace sign that goes out afterwards.
That's the best thing, is after maybe 5-10 minutes of implementing that, there were people going, my chest hurts, because they were doing it so much.
In past years, they used to keep a whiteboard, and the best thing is we didn't have the whiteboard, so. And we had the one reader at the end, which we had to call back.
Oh,
this gentleman from New Jersey who had this great accent, he went as thick as possible and was reading incredibly fast. It was hilarious.
Yeah, amazing, absolutely amazing.
I was not there this year because I was busy with other stuff. But I've attended it and tried to participate in previous years, and I've never made it through an entire sentence by myself. Not once. Like, which is funny because I give panels a lot, I speak publicly a lot. I'm not nervous about that, but asking me not to laugh at something that's supposed to be hilarious is just impossible. Like, I just can't do it.
It's horrible.
It's really rough.
So that can get revisited, though. What was the running count of different stuff that got mimed? It was the peace
Hades thing. There was the love. There was.
We did wings, or anything with flying. Wings.
Yeah, we were going to do antlers, but they didn't come up enough.
Oh, yeah. That's a shame. I feel offended as not actually a deer. But
we needed something for yellow, but we didn't make one.
We didn't make one for yellow, yeah.
Because every time there was a new character, no matter what the character, they described them, and they were always the same color.
Yeah.
They would have yellow legs with yellow arms and yellow wings and yellow antlers, and it'd be like a yellow
I was about to ask what story we're talking about. Now I know which one it is.
And, of course, there were yellow clothing.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, why wouldn't you color coordinate with yourself like a Final Fantasy character?
Yeah, and then we had the, in my opinion, and other mine. Yeah.
Oh, and they always do their rejoinders in the same order every time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
that was an interesting one.
And we got an amazing sketch. Yeah, afterwards.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That was so good.
Are there pictures?
I tweeted
them. Oh, hold on. You guys talk while I look through Ocean's
Yes, audio podcasts don't have everyone reach for their phone and be silent as they scroll through.
Yeah, like, link to this shit in the show notes, Ocean.
I forget. It's an edited podcast, so you can just skip over all that dead noise.
Or I just leave it in there. Because I don't want to edit.
The awkward moments of people doing other things.
How do writers breathe?
Oh, sorry. What?
No. Oh, wait, are you miming one of my roommates last night?
Did you find the picture?
I have no service on my phone.
I have it on.
Depending on what service people use, if there are other people who are going to try to get in touch with us.
I actually have the picture on here, so why don't I show it to you?
For the people at home, there are four people racing to find it first.
There. No, only three.
Oh my god. I thought it was going to be a doodle. This is like a legit sketch.
Exactly. We finished the panel and they're like, here, we drew this for this thing. We're just like, what the? Holy crap. Like, thank you? Like, I don't know what to do. They're just
the phenomenal. Just commitment to the character as described is remarkable.
To the people that are listening, and if you can find my Twitter, that's where the picture's up there. There's, like, I guess, a kind of an otter body with a dolphin tail.
With dolphin tail.
Wings, antlers, which maybe this is going to be Rikoshi's next.
I was going to say, this makes my persona look sane.
They're holding a sword. They've got a large black box where their groin would be. And they're going, men's rights! !! And then in parentheses, then lunch.
Then lunch.
There are many pointless meal stops in that story.
Many pointless what?
Meal stops. They go and they order food and it's described in detail. I would like this. I would like this. And you have six characters ordering food.
And then the waiter will even repeat, like, so that'll be three of this, two of that, one of this. Okay, that price will be $35. They each paid, he paid $7, he paid $5, he paid $3 and a tip of $2. You're just like, why?
This has been how not to write a story.
Exactly.
So this almost sounds like a modern day badly done Redwall.
Yeah.
Oh,
of the food description.
You don't know what this is, do you?
I saw the title. I looked at the wiki for article last night. That is as far as I got.
I have the copy of it. Oh, God. Because we started using my tablet to read it.
Yes. I was going to say, if we say it, we might summon it. So yeah.
And what was the one word description you did that Fuzz immediately tweeted? Oh, it's that one.
Now you're going to make me look it up.
Another person runs for the phone.
Here we are at Anthrocon in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Technology's great.
It is.
I don't know. I'll find it up later. Yeah. But yeah, no, that panel, I was amazed at how many people came out. Apparently, like, they're like, oh, it's really popular. I'm like, okay. And you're like, oh, wow, people are just so excited for this. And
well, they asked where's the line for people to read? And we pointed to one side, and half the room ran to the side.
It was like 30 people.
Come try your luck at reading.
We had to time them. It's like you have 2 minutes at one point, then, and get through the end, 1 minute.
And then still one guy, I think, read one sentence and just broke out laughed. He was like, I'm done.
It's hard. It's really hard. Especially.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go on.
I was just going to say, how many of you were on the submit and publish panel? How many of you attended that yesterday?
Okay. Ocean raises his hand.
Because it was an absolutely great moment during that I must share for posterity because it deserves to be told to so many more people. So what we were doing, at some point, Tyrion gets on the topic of why all writers should use Word. Not a word facsimile, actually use Word. And he tells a story. He tells a wonderful story. What he does is he says, we were working on this story with the author. And at some point, you know, we had accepted it. We sent out copy edits. We get the copy edit back from this particular author. And some glitch had occurred that made every single insertion or deletion of text in the entire story occur one space to the right.
Oh, right.
Everything was one space to the right, which means, of course, most of it was completely useless, and you had to go through by hand and fix every one of them. And I'm already cringing at this point, and I just look over the table, over, and I say, please tell me this was a short story. And Tyrion just sits back and says, you ever heard of Rukus? I was laughing so hard I almost fell out of my chair, and that's never happened to me before. Yes, apparently that was one of the novels that she has written. That is something like 100,000 words, and every single copy edit had to be done by hand.
The best part was when you asked that, he didn't answer right away. There was just this long silence, and he had a haunted look that just traveled between you two.
We had another good moment in one of the things when Ocean was late to the podcast and managed to spill out across the floor. Peeled out. He managed to corner around the table, but then he tripped. Lucky he didn't have dental work after this.
That was planned, though.
I did so beautiful before that, though. Like, I got up the escalators, and then I had to run across the bridge by the crosses. And it was just, I was low, like, keeping my center of gravity low as I'm just deking around people. And people are like, what the heck? As I'm just zipping around, going full tilt, I just curve around. I'm like, there, I've made it. I can slow down. But I've got that adrenaline rush, so I'm like, I'll just barrel roll over this table to make my entrance in there. Got the table, landed a little awkward, and
almost still got the projection screen.
Almost. The thing is, that was planned for the start of the action podcast, but yes. You got the timing wrong. You got the...
It was
who wants to be
seen in plot, right?
Yeah.
Would have been great for action, though. Here comes our panelist over the table.
But we'd even say anything. We just showed the picture, and Fuzz was like, "Oh, you read that book? He figured it out from the picture alone."
To be fair, if you know the book in question, there's no mistaking it for anything
it's
else.
It's quite distinct.
It's going to be entertaining having anyone listen to this and go, what the heck are they talking about?
I could repost it on the Twitter account.
Yeah, you got the link.
But then you would summon it.
Does that story still exist? Is it around?
It's probably
still...
I think somebody asked
if it was available.
Does this mean like I can call my tablet now the Container of Dark Secrets or something? Just because, like, I have horrible things stored on here.
They said it was still available on Amazon, but... I wouldn't pay for that.
Yeah, I think Ash said he bought it off of Amazon for 99 cents, and he's quite sure he's gotten his money's worth because they've been using that for now like 3 years of that panel, trying to read through the book because we just pick up where they left off last year.
We thought they left off. We just started somewhere.
They were like chapter 5 sounds about right, so we started in chapter 5.
So now that you have that on your tablet, every time you open and look at it, you have to say Klaatu, Barada, Nixto.
It's one of those.
Everything in there will be unleashed upon the earth.
If you search for it, Google gives you that thing that says, like, some of the search results have been removed. Google itself is trying to remove all evidence of its existence.
It's one of those forbidden evils that you're like, I know I'm not supposed to open Pandora's box, but I just want to know how bad it is. I know this train wreck, but I just, curiosity drives me.
I bet you there's a sales bump every Anthrocon.
You're probably right.
The Anthrocon bump.
It's a funny story home edition. Now you can do this with your family and friends.
There's a sequel too, which is got to be worse, isn't it?
Oh,
there's a sequel.
But again, if you search for it on Amazon, it just says you have chosen poorly.
And it just plays the scene from opening the arc, and they just face melts. Oh
man.
So has anyone ever written something like way back that they wish was buried, like something like this? I mean,
absolutely.
Not to this extent.
These things are still be written. Like, I've worked enough slush piles to see them happen. I'm sure you have seen your share.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Sufferwolf slash Pile, they are wonderful things.
I was assistant editor on a couple issues of New Fables, and some of this, like, there was this one author who can... I probably shouldn't say, actually.
Don't say the name.
I will say that we got repeated entries for stories from the same author in the same universe. They were different stories, and it's just like... And it was clearly, like, building on each other. It's like, if we didn't want to do, like, the first one or two of these, why would we want part three or four? Like, what are you doing?
I probably wrote something that bad, but it was in a green spiral binder that I haven't touched since eighth grade, so...
Yeah, I talked to Tim Sussman at one point about what was... I won't quite say the worst. It was the worst, best thing that Sofwolf ever received. And I wish I could describe it in all its glorious detail, because it sounded like one of those 12-year-old fantasies you had and you had to put down on paper run absolutely amok.
I think we're talking about the same thing, actually.
So what you're saying...
I don't think so.
So what you're saying is possibly the next RF. We have to try as hard as we can to get that on tape.
I don't know if it actually exists or not. All I know is it was submitted. I have no idea what happened to it. I don't even know the name.
Please, nobody bother Tim Sussman to find out.
Please don't. Please don't. He won't tell you, for starters.
No, yeah, he won't. That's true.
You know, there is the thing about being the editor and respecting the privacy of the writer. Anytime we say anything bad about writers, we generally try and make it as as obscure as possible. We make it so you cannot figure out who it is unless you are privy to the details of that particular thing.
Yeah, we're trying to be classy, I think.
We are, yes.
Trying being the key word.
Yeah.
Professional.
Unless it's not their fault and it's just something they were victimized because of a bad editing program, in which case you're going to say...
It wasn't her fault. It was the program's fault.
I totally feel for her, because every time Ocean sends me more edits to work on for Noir or anything, I send it back in words like 93 and 2007 version. You want DOCX, that's what you want to do? Yeah. So I hit save and it just turns it into that, and I send it back to him without looking at it. And that's the same. Yeah.
To be fair, like, it's not a... At least it could be worse. Yeah. I was just like, you sent me another DocX. You sent me another... This is the fourth one.
I know. It is my fault. I got to find that little thing you toggle that says don't save.
On the technology technology panel, we talked about that, and we went over that. If you had come...
I tried to, but I...
Yanis was very determined to make sure everybody knew. We spent an entire hour discussing Word in nauseating detail. No. We didn't have many people, but we tried to help those people who came so they would never... screw this up, this type of stuff up.
You know what it was? I had, like, questions, but you never want to come in for, like, the last 20 minutes of a panel, because you know all the questions you asked, everyone's just going to stare at it like, dude, we just covered it.
Yeah, exactly.
We had moved to Scrivener by then.
So, and to clarify, because DocX is now 12 years old, like, when people that were born when DocX was are now writing terrible furry stories of their own.
Yeah.
In DocX.
In DocX, yeah.
I feel so old.
I know, right? 97 to 2003, I think it is.
Yeah.
And it was Word 2007 introduced DocX.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we had 12 years. Wow.
Jeez.
DocX is my, like, least favorite supervillain.
Like, from a programming standpoint, I understand what they're doing with DocX. It makes sense with OpenXML, but I'm not going to bore people on the podcast about it.
Welcome to Ocean's Technological Pedantry Power Hour.
The three of us could probably go on it for a while. But
I think a
lobotomy
would be a
better
choice.
We should do? We should submit all stories in LaTeX. In tech.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
I don't want to know.
No, I agree with this. You know why?
Is.
But
we were talking about that on the Guild Shoutbox a while back, weren't we?
Yeah. So LaTeX, for those listening to the podcast who do not know, is the standard format typically used at least by mathematicians and a large percentage of scientists to make their documents look the way they should for various scientific publications, and it's a wonderful system once you get the hang of it. That's the caveat. Yeah.
That's like, oh, he's a great guy once you get to know him, once you get through, like, the insufferable alcoholism and the fact that he'll use racial slurs to your face.
that's a pain we leave for the mathematicians.
That sounds about right, yeah.
I don't know math. My degree is in biology. They didn't teach us that.
Slip, you wanted to ask Rikoshi that one question before. Now would be the best opportunity to do that.
And now I'm having a brain melt.
The short story versus novel.
Oh, that, when we were on the panel, yeah.
Oh, golly.
I think I mentioned that to you after the fact. It was the question about what the difference is in world building, what's your process for putting it together for a world you're going to use for a novel or two or three versus a short story.
The reason
I didn't ask you, because you basically would have had the panel for like half an hour, we just would have been messing around on the phones doing nothing.
So the way I do it is I tend to think of short stories as encapsulating basically a single event. Even if there's not doesn't mean literally only one thing happens in the story, but the crux of it revolves around one particular thing that happens, and then whether that's the climax or whether that's inciting or whatnot. I mean, ultimately that's what the short story, is about, which leaves you a lot less in the way of room to develop a world. If you're writing short stories in a pre-existing setting that you use, then that work has been done. Congratulations. And, plenty of authors do that. I've done that. A bunch of authors I know do that. But a lot of times, and this is especially true of me, most of my short stories are just encapsulated in their own little world. And it really depends on how important the details of the setting are to the story. And basically include only what is necessary to give a sense of the setting as it pertains to the story. For a lot of stories, it won't even really be all that necessary if you think about it. If you're basically dealing with, a character dynamic and, a certain conflict and what's going on, perhaps the setting details aren't that important. When you move to something larger and more complex like a novel, where you have a narrative playing out over a much larger scale and a much larger scope, at that point, it's basically impossible at that point, unless you're doing something really gimmicky or unique or original, experimental, to not have a fleshed out setting to support the story. Because at that point, the story is so big and so involved that you need that larger framework, because it can't just take place in a vacuum, if that makes any sense. There you go. Wow, suddenly we go from bitching about bad story stuff and poor tech habits, and now it's time for serious writing advice. That's a great question, though.
Yeah, take what I say with a grain of salt, because I'm the only unpublished author here. But for me, world building is no different for a short story than it is a novel. The only difference is the amount of detail I include in the story. I personally know everything that's going on. Every location, it's just stuff I work out. Doesn't matter if it's 8,000 words or if it's 50,000 words or 100,000 words. It's all the same as far as my actual world building.
Ricky, did you start with short stories or did you start with novels? Or
I started with short stories and then and you mean not in answering the question just now. Sorry, I totally parsed that question wrong.
I know words.
When did I start out writing? Well, I guess it depends on how far back you want to say I started writing, which, was in elementary school, really.
I've just heard that some people say that, if you've been writing a lot of short stories, it takes a bit to learn how to write a novel, or vice versa, because of the way that you construct them and go about designing them.
All right, so in this case, when I think of when I started furry writing and what my approach to furry writing was, I started out trying to write novels, and I didn't know how to write novels at the time. I wasn't very good at it. I had a few failed half and quarter drafts of a few different manuscripts that I tried to put together. And what happened was I got so frustrated at not being able to finish anything that I switched over to writing short stories, because I wanted to have the gratification of having something that was done. Now, that is the wrong attitude to have, but as a novice writer, it's an understandable one to have. And so I was like, well, okay. And then for the next few years, I mostly just wrote short stories, and to the point where I got really comfortable writing them. And then at this point, I was like, oh, okay, now that I've kind of got some momentum going, I'll try to write a novel again. And that's when you realize it's like, okay, writing a novel is not just like writing a short story, but it's longer. It's a much different process. It's a much, it involves a completely different technique. And it's certainly possible to do both. I mean, I've done both. I know, you know, Kyle Gold does both. A number of people in this room do both. But it was really nice and humbling, because I had always thought of short stories as like, oh, a lesser form of storytelling than a novel. It's like, well, why wouldn't more be better? And, you know, the famous axiom, like, sometimes less is more. And sometimes less really is more. A lot of times people are like, oh, like, you, when they'll hear, like, you have an idea for a story, it's like, oh, have you thought about fleshing that out for a novel? And not every idea needs to be, or even should be, fleshed out into a novel. Sometimes certain ideas are meant for a short story, and trying to expand them into something bigger is a mistake. And very often times people will have an idea for a novel and like, well, I have this thing, but, you know, I don't have enough structure to support it. It's like, well, maybe what you have isn't a novel. Maybe what you have shouldn't be a novel. Maybe it's a novella. Maybe it's just a long, short story, which is a real thing, even as silly as it says, sounds to say it out loud.
How often have you tried one and it turned into the other?
Summerhill is the most famous example I can think of that. Where I started, it was literally just a short story, which was kind of like a series of, not vignettes, but actually, I guess they were sort of vignettes in a way that they were. It was a sequence of fantastical things that happened to this one character that sort of showed how he had, you know, transformed from this, you know, kind of lost wandering creature into somebody with a sense of adventure. And one of the people that I had reading it was like, there's a lot to unpack here, and this idea, like, doesn't just deserve to be turned into something more, it almost demands to be something more. Those are his words, not mine. So I'm not saying that this is a story that demanded to be told, but this idea, just basically, it was too complex and too involved to fully be realized within a short story. And I saw that, and I was like, oh, god damn it, you're right. Which was like a bad thing. I was like, oh, like, I don't have the time and energy to do a novel, but, like, yeah, like, that is what this should be. And then 3 years later, I had a book out of it. And, I mean, as much as there were a lot of missteps along the way, and I didn't quite have it all together to start, it wound up being that, yeah, okay, this really was an idea that warranted being fleshed out to that point.
Cool. I'd like to add another question to you once again. Sorry.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We've turned from the After Hours podcast into the let's all ask Ricky questions we didn't other times during the convention.
Yeah, that's perfectly fine.
People don't mind this open discussion. I'll keep talking.
We shoot the breeze, we can laugh, we can say whatever we want. Yeah.
So my question is, I know you have your work as a translator, which you've been doing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious how, because you talked about this going from short stories to novels and these sorts of things.
Right.
How did your experience as a translator inform those, that transformation from short story to novel and so forth?
You know, it's funny, actually, because one of the biggest things that it taught me was actually dialogue writing. Most of the bulk of my translation work, especially early on, was for video games. And so in that case, the story is all being told through character interaction and character dialogue. And so most of what I was doing there was, okay, translate this dialogue from Japanese into English and now make it sound like good English. So I got a whole lot of experience with dialogue writing. Actually, my company paid for me to take a night course in screenwriting because that's basically, again, all about having your dialogue down, because, you know, that would then make my job as a, you know, translation dialogue writer better. And that also works too. By the way, that's a good piece of advice. If you want to get better at writing dialogue, try to take a screenwriting class. You can learn a lot from it from there. And also just about, like, scene staging and all that as well is also really helpful to learn. So that's one of the bigger influences that translation had on my writing. And then, you know, it's funny, it's almost more the other way around, that when I moved on to translating novels instead, the way that a Japanese book is structured is very different. Like, it's in terms of paragraph structure and sentence structure and dialogue attribution from English. And so at this point, it was my writing career that helped me to transition to a new stage of my translation career. And it was a challenge, but it was a fun challenge. And a lot of people use the term fun challenge a lot, but in this case, I really can't emphasize enough that that's exactly what this was. It was actually very enjoyable to do and very rewarding when I was done, and I'm glad that people received the translator work as well as they did.
So, I've heard that in Japan, and they have more different, we have our usual upside down check mark for plot.
Right.
And in Japan, they have much more different. There's the two scenes, and then the third one is over here, and then they join back together. I can't remember what
that comes
from. You know
what
I'm talking about?
Yeah, it's. And I apologize because it's day four into a very long convention. I've had about 13 hours of sleep, and I'm also a few beers in. So I don't quite remember.
I can't
the
remember
exact
the
origin of it,
which probably just ruins the whole podcast.
But no, it is a four beat story, and I forget what the individual beats are called. But it can be applied to. You see a lot of four panel Japanese comics, mm-hmm. and they follow that structure just on a much smaller scale. Whereas we have introduction, setup, climax, and then in the case of it could either be denouement or a punchline if it's a joke.
Did you find a lot of this when you were translating? Did you find that this affected your writing in any way?
Not really, because the two books I've translated are, they're both science fiction novels. So they actually, in terms of plot structure, follow that of, an English-written novel fairly well. It was more just in terms of arranging the page. And so, for example, one of the things that we do a lot in English is you'll have a partial line of dialogue and then comma, prose exposition, finished line of dialogue, and that sort of thing. In a Japanese work, what I would see way more often is here's several lines of dialogue and now here are several lines of prose explaining the action that was going on in what you just read. It's a little different, and in order to make that flow properly in English, there's a lot of interposing of those things and sort of interweaving it so that it sounds more natural to an English reader. And content-wise, it's all the same. I always try to stay faithful to the source language. It's just in a slightly different order, so that it makes sense to the English reader's ear. That it feels natural, because even as somebody who does speak and read and understand Japanese, just as a reader and the way that I process stories is so ingrained in me, in English, it's difficult for me to follow when it's here's all this dialogue. It's and by the way, this was going on while that was all happening, and that's not naturally how we tell stories in English, and so that's one of the things that you as a translator you can and in some cases probably should change.
That did oddly remind me of something I remember from studying haiku a long time ago, where haiku is such an awkward topic to talk about because people who have studied any amount of Japanese start getting horribly pedantic about how haiku should be written, even in English. And we start going, 5-7-5 is not how it's actually supposed to be done. But one of the other aspects of haiku, which never really made the jump to most modern haiku that's written in America, is a kind of a reversal that happens within the haiku, that you have two lines typically that set up some sort of idea or image or emotion, and then you have a third one which somehow flips it or reverses it or changes the way that you are viewing the world. And some of what you were talking about was reminding me of that.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, is that the haiku form is meant for a completely different language than English.
Right, yes.
And the way that the poetry of the two languages works is completely different, which is why in English the default is for haiku to be more like a joke, almost more like a limerick. They're usually funny instead of thematic. And it's just the fact of the matter is that the way that English poetry ordinarily, you have things like iambic pentameter, but we're more about rhythm and rhyming, and haiku is more about you have this 17 syllable poem, and you're trying to convey an image, again with that sort of flip around toward the end. And that poetic nuance is almost always lost in English, at least when you are generating a haiku in English. There are some wonderful haiku translations out there that I've read.
Japanese isn't the only language that has it. I did some reading about Old Norse poems, and
they
used a lot of different words that had different meanings. And without speaking that language, which I don't know how you can truly appreciate that those types of ancient, those old epics, because they used all these types of different word swaps that just doesn't get to translate.
Yeah, like
multiple meanings.
Yeah, translation, especially translation of older languages into modern language is a really tricky thing. And while I'm only bilingual in the sense that, you know, okay, like I'm a native English speaker, I'm fluent in Japanese to the point that I translate it for a living, but I'm sort of a linguistic hobbyist, and so I know a lot about a bunch of different languages and sort of how they do things, and just seeing like just all sorts of problems that arise, and you have this presupposition that, you know, something in a language is going to be something else in a different language, and it's the lack of any real true one-to-one in that is, if you're not, you know, a translator, if you're not a linguist, or if you just haven't been exposed to that, then that's not something that a lot of people immediately, you know or necessarily have a grasp for. So, I mean, that's one of those things that I've always found interesting, because you hear a lot of people say, at least I hear it as somebody who is involved with Japanese, and a lot of people in our fandom are fans of, you know, Japanese media, like cartoons and comics, and then, of course, you know, like video games and whatnot. And a lot of people, like, know a small smattering of Japanese just as fans of Japanese media and Japanese culture, and there's this idea, it's like, oh, it's like Japanese is, like, such, like, this, like, amazing language, like, they have, like, single words that, like, just can't be expressed in English, like, as, like, a concept. It's like, yes, that's true, but so is the exact opposite. Like, we have words in English that don't easily translate back into Japanese. It's just like, surprise, surprise, that's how languages work. It's like, it's not just like a code cipher, like, oh, swap out, you know, words A, B, and C for words like D, E, and F. It's like, hey, sometimes, like, there's a concept that's more, like, important culturally that you can sum up more succinctly. It's like, I think something that's Finnish has, like, several different words for several very different kinds of depression. And it's just like, okay, like, at the point where, like, when you're living in the frozen north where it's, like, you know, dark a lot of the year and you're just, like, alone and miserable, the different nuances and different kinds of depression, like, suddenly become a lot more relevant. And, like, so of course you're going to have different words for that.
What are some good words or concepts we use in English that don't translate well into Japanese?
Oh, wow, okay. Let me think about that for a bit. It's a lot harder to make portmanteaus in Japanese than it is in English, and if for the listeners out there who don't know what that is, that's like when you take two words to make a new word, like, you know, like webinar, for a really annoying example, like webinar, like webinar. Like, you can't really do that in Japanese. Very often they'll just take the English that we use and just put it into their language. A lot of Japanese technical terminology is just English in katakana.
Yeah,
that's why you hear people, and this is the same with Indian, because I work IT, yeah. So I hear a lot of, you know, Microsoft, rah-rah-rah-rah-rah.
Oh, yeah, I mean.
You can hear the words that they can't translate.
Although that doesn't always work so well in Japanese, because the way, there are certain phraseologies that they take long, complicated phrases and shrink them down in ways that make absolutely no sense to an English speaker, but are perfectly sensible to the Japanese. The most great example of this is pasukon.
Oh, yeah.
Pasukon. You say that to someone who's English, and they go, I have no idea what you're saying. You go up to a Japanese person, they'll go, oh, pasukon, personal computer.
It's just, yeah, the syllables are so different between English and Japanese. It's,
yeah. Or another one for modern technology is apuri.
Apuri?
Apuri.
I should know this one.
Yeah.
Operating system?
No, it's just for application.
Application.
Would we say apps? Your smartphone app? They say apri, because that you can't just end it. You can't end on a consonant P in Japanese. So they've shortened it down to just the first three syllables. Apri. So.
Nice.
So in case you didn't hear all that shuffling of chairs, we have more people that have joined us.
It was the quietest game of musical chairs I've ever heard.
I'm just like trying to direct people.
Well, this is actually one of the most serious ways I've ever heard shit writers say start.
Well, the one we had at Furthermore was like this too. We had started out fun and then we broke into discussion that turned into Ask Ricky Everything.
Yeah.
So, oh.
We now have Yanis, Ash, and Sparva here too.
So actually, when you were commenting about the multiple words in Finnish for depression, it's the 20-plus words for snow in Inuit, which refers to not only the act of snow coming down, but also the condition, the other environmental conditions of snow.
Yeah.
Like slush.
For the record, I've heard that that's mostly an urban legend, and that was more used as like an object lesson and not like a literal, oh, there's actually 20 different words for snow.
There actually are more than 20, but it's been lost and condensed as their language has slowly been dismantled.
I mean, like, I don't really know a lot about, you know, sorry, Canada. I don't know your native languages very well.
I think what you're referencing is that there are some versions of that saying was there's 100 words for snow.
Yeah.
And that's because the Inuit language is one of those languages where you can append things and prepend things in the same way that German does. And so you're not really doing new words, you're just creating new word phrases that are written as single words.
Yeah, it's like kind of people say, it's like, oh, like the Japanese, like, you know, language uses like three writing systems. And it's like, well, no, it's all one writing system. You just use, you know, three different character sets. It's kind of like how in English we will use Arabic numerals to write out numbers. I mean, in addition to Roman letters, it's almost literally the exact same thing.
It's just a subset. We're just subsetting our language characters.
Yeah. It's like, also, it's like, hey, we have uppercase and lowercase letters. Those are technically different.
And linguistically, we do have a sense, a tendency to take the other, whatever the foreign language is to us, and do one of two things with it. It is either ugly, brutal, and scary, or it is beautiful, lofty, and poetic. And the simple fact is, we all know, any language can be both. It's just in how you're using it, how you're constructing it, everything like that. But there's just this tendency to view it as extremes when you're talking about the other versus your own.
Well, particularly when you get into topics such as Orientalism, which is a wonderful critical theory piece on the idea of the other, but particularly in regards to how Europe viewed pretty much the East in general. We're talking India, Mongolia, China, Japan, how they were viewed in the terms of the 15th, 16th, and 17th century. And it's I do not remember who wrote this entire book. It's about a 300-page discovery of the other and how Western Europe destroyed modern, the ability for modern integration of culture by having that 300 years of the other that was artificially created.
We've done a lot in Western culture. It's very fascinating. If you go back and look at the Middle East, they were much more liberal 500 years ago than they are today.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, much more liberal.
So are we.
Not so much. I would disagree with that. I think the Arabics were much more liberal than the Europeans were at that in that era.
They were more progressive.
More
and
progressive,
it,
absolutely.
And it's swapped now.
Well, I'm just two steps away from like, yes, the Pacific is where all the business should be.
I wondered if we should return to the gold standard.
I don't know if democracy is working in the East.
I don't know if democracy is working here.
Well, democracy was working there for several centuries before it came here, and then we gave them our version, which is... We could go into a whole political writing conversation.
Yeah, that's it.
Let's keep it about writing, less about politics.
Less about politics.
That
sounds good.
So how do you write politics?
How do you write politics?
Oh, God.
Carefully.
There's going to be a giant editing cut, right?
You know, in Metamore Keep, I wrote a 30-page treatise on the existence of...
Stop. Remember, this is for public consumption.
Oh, well, this can be edited out.
Mark.
Yes. Nobody gets my Metamore Keep jokes anymore.
Is that for good reason?
You really should. And I'll explain after we're done.
Okay.
That's an off-the-record chat.
Yes. So how did you guys enjoy the con?
It was pretty good. Still trying to get over the idea that once I give panels to other people, I can let them go and let them fly free and I don't have to try and be there or anything like that. Beyond the panels that I'm on, and that's it.
So the people, for the people who are listening, you can't actually see this, and you really should, it would be more fun if you could. But I'm holding a gun to my head, just going bang, so I can fall over.
This is his finger, not a real gun.
Yes.
Oh, gee.
You don't need to make any phone calls or anything like that.
But it was actually a lot of fun working with a lot of more writers this year. Having Rikoshi / every other name in the book.
Yeah, whatever. You can call me.
Show up and actually teach a number of panels, working with Fugue, working with Night Eyes. It was great to also have you guys run panels so I didn't have to.
It was very enjoyable doing it.
I think for the listener's edification, how many panels did you do last year versus how many panels did you do
actually,
this
it's
year?
Better if you do this over the course of the last decade that I have been doing, decade plus I have been doing this. I am down from 20 plus to 6.
I'm largely responsible for that because as soon as I took over the schedule, I went, yeah, let's spread the workout.
Yeah, so
everyone gets this many.
The writing track has grown wonderfully, and it's great to have the other writers come here and actually teach so I don't have to do it all myself.
So like the trick here is that if you're really busy with panels, start dating somebody else who has interested in that thing and then them take on your panels for you.
No. He just, I handle all of the politics and that. He handles the scheduling, corralling all of you cats. Herding writers is like herding cats. Yes. Except for penguins and foxes.
It's okay. I herd the menagerie into a cohesive schedule as best I can. Let's put it that way.
That didn't work well.
It was also great to pimp. It was also great to pimp my anthology when several of the writers were here.
There were a bunch of fake like back cover quotes that people kept wanting to cite me for.
There was
one about I like noir pretty okay.
It's like, hey, I like noir. Maybe I should buy this book when it comes out. I'll be like, boom. Well, I would be surprised if like Terry or Fuzz would be like, yeah, we'll put that on the back.
Well, here's how you do. You use the ellipses, even though you hate ellipses, to indicate that something has been cut out and just say, buy this book.
I posted today, I showed out like, hey, look, my story's in Roar, and I pointed out specifically, I don't hate ellipses all the time. The first sentence has an ellipses in it.
I will say this, as a Japanese translator, I also have a seething hatred for the unnecessary ellipses.
So,
and I blame the Japanese language and Japanese media, especially video games, for overuse of ellipses in English writers by amateurs.
What are you doing tonight? Keep whispering these sweet nothings into my ear.
It's like,
here's the thing. I don't even have a singular pet peeve. I have a seething hatred for all misused punctuation that is either overused by a particular person or underused in its proper places. Because, again, tools in a toolbox. Use the right tool for the right job.
Every so often, I will find a story, and it's like, oh, this is baby's first, I just learned how to use the semicolon correctly story. And it's like, yes, you are using the semicolon correctly. Congratulations. That's more than most people can say. You don't need to use it every other sentence.
I remember working with a certain author on one of his stories and actually having to teach them the semicolon, and it was great when they learned it. But yeah, it ended up looking like they loaded a gun with them and shot it.
Guilty as charged myself. I went hog wild with the semicolon. Oh, and the M-dash. I was filleting the M-dash's metaphorical, junk when I learned how to use that properly for the
every
first
Every author
while.
Has their M-dash, I just figured it out. I figured out Alt-0151. Hooray!
Or dash-dash space and then automatically corrects it to the correct one.
Yeah.
If you have it set up to do that.
Yeah, well, you should.
Oh, you missed about how, write your things in normal word format or Ocean will kill you.
I will accept.
Or all the editors will kill you.
To be fair, as much as I have my war on the dots, people were getting quite happy and enjoying my rage at the panels anytime it came up. Even during the bad erotica panel, they would have a few of those and I would just start to pound the table every time.
So Ocean, if I send you a story file and I have gone through and changed the font color on my ellipses to purple.
He keeps saying if he ever writes for an anthology of mine, he's going to put the text in purple.
I'm purple paper. I'm just going to send him a purple copy.
That's worth half a letter grade.
I mean,
this is beautiful, but there's way too much purple prose.
I know how to do it. I know how to do it. I know how to make Ocean's head explode. Send an entire paper written, or not paper one. Send an entire story written in Braille. Well, make sure it's an RTF.
Ooh. Actually, you know,
make sure it's an ODT.
Or Morse.
Half of this.
No, who was it just the other day? It's like, yeah, ellipses is great. You know, it's great for a pause or trailing off or if you want to say S.
Nice.
Everyone takes a second and goes dot, dot, dot. Oh, yeah, that's what S is in Morse code.
Yeah.
Yep. So I honestly don't mind RTF if that's how the initial draft is sent to me, but if I send it back to you in Word, I want it back in Word format.
Okay, I use Word for my editing, I can take an RTF, but the problem is that I go through the slush pile on my tablet. And my tablet, and a lot of Android tablets these days, just apparently just want to barf and choke on RTF. I don't know why.
It's the XML encoding.
Yeah.
It's not supported.
Yeah, I mean, I have an editor on my tablet that can handle it, but I actually have to install a custom Office applet.
Which is weird, because like it's XML, but yet they're okay with DocX half the time, which is just back to
OpenXML.
Oh,
and DocX is a nightmare to work with.
Yeah.
Here's the
welcome back
to
earlier in the
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys, we're late.
I'll just cut, paste, switch them around.
We're having
the serious discussion at the end.
Time-traveling Ash.
No, it was dinner, and there was actually really good dinner, so that's why we're late. Yeah.
Hey, you know what? If as long as it was like food or getting laid, like it.
Everyone should try the Commoner. Really good food.
Huh?
We wandered for about like an hour and a half trying to find a restaurant. That
literally
was open
an hour and a half.
That would seat more than five
people. Heyoka over there. Heyoka actually found in the list of like 20 places open, and most of them.
Heyoka, I'm hiring your services next AC.
He's not cheap. He's
that
like
walk was
an
way
hour.
Too long.
He'll be Buana, your guide.
Oh.
Yeah, whatever.
We'll just find an alpaca furry. And
but no, I mean, on the topic of formatting, I don't know if Rob here would agree with me, but it's mostly online poster, not a published author. RTF is a really good format. It's generally accepted by most of the websites, you know, and it's good for that, for posting online our free stuff, as you say.
Yeah, but here's what I'll say the counterpoint to that. If you're going to post for free, yeah, save it in RTF, upload it if you know that works with the website. If you're trying to do anything professional, by Word, set your default to save as a doc, not a docx,
right, yeah.
And then just do that forever and ever, amen.
We spent an entire hour.
Yeah, I know. That,
yeah,
I
an entire yeah. hour yelling at people about that.
And that's one. Yes. That's one that I missed, and I'm sorry I did because I wanted to go to it, but I had obligations.
Someday, at several people's request, I am going to work out the PowerPoint for that. I'm going to actually record it, and then I'm going to put it online to say,
yeah.
you know,
yes,
spread
please.
My dark gospel of proper
right, yeah,
throughout
what,
the land.
That's what Ocean was saying. Just retweet that
yes.
over and over again.
I have a question for the editors in the room, which is a lot of us, actually. Yeah. Text.txt. I have actually received a submission when I was doing Fang 5 that was a .txt file.
Really?
Wow. What? At least you don't have to worry about italics.
All right, raise the... Oh, no, they put in HTML text.
No!
Oh,
no.
All right, raise the failure
okay,
space.
Now they, now.
The failure boat is, you know...
You what you tell them? You'll just put them on... You get to be in the ebook.
No, I'll tell you, you know what happened to that story? It got a rejection letter that was one sentence. I'm sorry, it's not what I'm looking for. I sent one of those. It was that person.
Because I was looking for someone who could follow submission guidelines.
Yeah, I mean, also an Office 365 subscription is dirt cheap.
So, someone dirt. Needs to write and publish an erotic story called Submission Guidelines.
That sounds like a job for Kane Hirasaki.
Oh, that sounds like a job for Ash.
No, because I'd rather write Fox News.
Oh, that was already a story.
Yeah, that was already a
story. I know, like 10 times.
Yeah, well, no, yeah. There was one, I think it was in like Tales of the Neon Phoenix or something. I forget what the anthology was called, but...
Okay, yeah, I will take up the mantle. I will do submission guidelines. It will be editor on writer porn. There'll be various linguistic puns and things like that. I'll do this at some point.
You so heard it here first, and since this is Ocean's Rodeo, Ocean's going to make sure it happens.
Yes,
I'll edit it.
Wait, was that a? Never mind. So we'll talk later. As I heard from the Third Planet folks, this was the release party of anthology. This was the celebration of anthologies. I think there were like four or five that came out.
This? Today?
This con.
Mm. Fangor, Anthropomorphic Century, and...
Oh. Heat, if you want. Or no. Were we just
no.
talking Third Planet?
Third Planet had four, had I think four or five. So Roar, and there were
Roar
two
Fang.
By Fred Patton. There were
yeah.
Roar and Fang. There
were... Furry Future was
No, Furry Future came
Furry
out.
Furry Future was
a
Oh, was it the
MMO? No. FC. It came out to FC.
Yeah, FC.
Yeah, they had they released a lot of anthologies in the last couple months, and this was the kind of big push for all of them.
It's going to be even more at Rainforest.
Yeah, yeah.
That just amazes me. I am constantly in awe of Tyrion and Fuzz and the amount they managed to get done. Because in the amount of time that they would, you know, get an entire story ready to go out the door, I'm like, you know, I'm maybe a fifth of the way through a project. That's so, it.
But well, you guys have heat on clockwork. Okay, sorry. You have a deadline.
Okay. Yes.
You have a deadline.
You just ruined the magic.
Beyond that. Beyond that. Yeah, we have a lot of fun year to year. In fact, it's hilarious. If you go, so at the end of every issue of Heat, there is the afterglow, which is the editor's words on what happened during the year. Go back, starting from issue 2, and go and read them, and you will see that about 90% of them are about how they were struggling to hit the deadline.
But so they have hit the deadline.
They have hit the deadline.
The half off of 8. Let's just see what it says at the end. Heat 8.
Work for like Fang. Mm-hmm. It gets sent to Tyrion completely edited in a single document, exported into Word. Like their job is layout, line up with the cover, and print.
That's fair enough. But
same with War.
Well, the easy thing with those, and I'm not going to say easy isn't easy, but the difference between Heat and that is Heat, you guys have to lay out a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
and you've got comics and art.
The layout
is
much more complex.
Yes. The formatting in Heat is awesome.
Oh. I managed to put multiple telegrams into Fang. I got to hear about how painful that was to format those.
Tyrion?
Yes. Yeah, Tyrion.
Yeah, we went back and forth for about 3 hours trying to decide what method of killing you was going to be utilized.
Oh, thank you.
We settled on boiling oil.
All right. Like, is anyone else concerned that like so many of like Ash's conflicts end with him trying to figure out how to kill someone?
Yes.
Since I'm the current target.
Yes.
All right.
I don't know, Fugue. This really sounds like high, like upbeat and refreshing. You know, it's exciting and energizing to see a new issue of Heat come together at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's editor code. That's the one where it isn't in there.
The one here. Along with the new design is an easier to use content management system. That doesn't sound annoying at all.
What issue is that?
This is 8.
You can find 7 and 9.
We'll just say this is the one that I got half off because there was a copy error in the
double page.
Oh, actually,
oops box.
There was a great thing that happened this year. We brought out a bunch of misprinted books.
I saw that.
And we had a whole box, and we discounted them sometimes down to like $3 because they were so
bent.
I saw one that was actually crushed and water stained on the pages.
Yes.
I saw a few cut wrongs in there, that kind of thing.
But there were a couple that just got people laughing so hard they had to buy it. So there was, I think it was Uncovered.
There was a bunch of Uncovered
where you get like halfway through. And then there's suddenly 2 or 3 chapters that are printed upside down. And then it gets back to normal. And people just laugh so hard
suddenly at this, they bought the book.
There's nothing wrong with the book.
No, there's nothing wrong with the book. You still have everything. It's just that suddenly it goes upside down.
Now it's a collector's edition.
There was one, I think it was Divisions, where the cover was put down upside down.
Oh, so the book is upside down.
So the book is upside down. So you open from the front cover and you're on page 400, the wrong way orientation. And what was...
Just rip the pages out and stick them back in the right way.
There was one book, and I can't remember which it was. It was, again, one of the Kyle Gold novels, that the binding was done on the wrong side. So in addition to the whole upside down problem, you're reading it manga style. You're reading it right to left.
You need a left-handed book, and I didn't buy this.
I was just going to say, you could sell it to the Asian crowd. You know,
yeah, exactly.
And this, yeah,
is that still a thing?
What, the right to left?
Oh yeah, the right to left in, you know, just English, but just done that way. Just
oh yeah.
Done Tokyo Pop still does.
You see that manga a lot. Translated manga.
Now, because of this, and because when this comes out,
you're going to get inundated with emails going, when is the Kyle Gold manga coming out? Because we're not going to listen to the whole conversation about how it's actually just a left-handed
thing. I'm really resisting the urge to start texting Kyle and to warn him right now.
I heard you were doing a manga.
He just needs to get really strong at now.
I mean, I can try to find an artist to do a graphic novel of my Lady Gaga He-Man story. Actually, that'll make me feel better.
Christy still has that in her possession, and she finds it every time she moves. It's in a box. It's at another box. It's at another box in a lock box with all of the other entries from across time. Yours is on top.
Oh.
It's also got various sigils and,
I will point out that the very first time I ran into Ash at the Anthrocon that I submitted the story to Iron Author, he walks up and, reaches out to choke me.
It was horrifying.
Here's the funniest thing. The first time we met, I blighted him with a second place Iron Author submission. That we had just met at the con.
Yeah, but I had... Never mind. That's inappropriate.
I was about to say, you just told them, I'm not going to touch on that story now that I think about it.
I'm just
remembering the Ayn Rand kangaroo with the keyblade. the werewolves of the soul and the vampires of the mind, and we weren't sure if they were metaphorical or literal, or if that was the point.
Still the best entry that has ever come across Iron Author was the one that, the reason why we stopped the contest for the last 2 years is it was so amazing we had to let people forget about it a little bit. Was Zeno Chu, I Choose You.
Oh, I was not at that convention, but I know the author, and I was able... Actually, they had me read it to myself at a restaurant. And I almost didn't want to eat afterwards. So that's a glowing recommendation.
Yeah, but the thing is it was an exception. He had actually captured the spirit of Iron Author.
Wow.
Channel your inner 12-year-old with your current levels of grammar.
I just had to walk up to the cop in my head and go, what's that? Thunk. Knock him out. Let everything get out.
And if anyone wants copies of this, please email me at nash.anthologies@gmail.com.
No, this is a terrible idea.
Why don't you just put it up on a website?
Go past this. Never play this again.
99 cents on Amazon.
No, it's got copyrighted characters. Oh, you're right.
I'm safe. Open. Okay, free fan fiction then.
They wouldn't allow it
on a server in a dark, dark room far, far below the earth.
I can put it on my own private Amazon server. I can check my content.
You mentioned book errors. Reminded me of something I have in my possession. It belonged to my mother, and my mother's family. They never had a lot of money, but she had some Nancy Drew and Hardy Boys books. And the one that came down to me is a Hardy Boys book called The Clue in the Embers. And the Hardy Boys, for anybody who don't know, which is probably a lot of people, because they're not as popular as they once were, they are mystery stories.
Classic teenage boy mysteries. I've never realized that maybe at this point you kind of have to explain what they were because they were such a staple.
They're still in print.
Okay.
And they are what you bump up to when you're about 12 or 13,
I don't know what the modern YA...
They're a stair-stepper.
Yeah.
But I remember... So I was reading this as a kid. I was like, oh, this is really cool. They're trying to figure out what's going on, and this kid inherited his uncle's curio shop contents, and now people are after him because of a medallion that's actually a map. And I get about 2/3 of the way through the book, and things start getting exciting. They're marching them up a volcano to help them find these bad guys are trying to find the treasure. And then I'm like, oh, and then and then he said, look at that, and they looked, and there they saw, and I turned the page, and it's blank. And the next page is blank, and the next page is blank, and then the next page, that wasn't what I thought it was, they said, or something like that. And it's just, and then again, close to the very end, at the climax, in the big climactic fist fight, 3 or 4 empty blank pages.
I can just imagine it's just the book is going
There's a short story about that. I read it in grade 9. I wish I could remember the name, about a guy that's so stressed out. He's like, the doctor's like, you're gonna go bonkers. Take a break. You have to take a trip. So he goes on a trip. He's taking a nice relaxing trip And he's on a train, and he's sitting there, and he overhears this conversation of people behind them, and they start telling, like, oh my goodness, did you hear about the murder case that just went on? They're like, what happened? Oh, the two brothers, they're twin brothers, they went and they murdered their father. And then, you know, it was gruesome, they had a big trial, and then the first brother came forward and said, I committed the murder. And so he went to murder, or he went to trial, and right when they're going to send the judgment, the other brother comes in and goes, I would like to testify, you know, the lawyer. They had hired a lawyer, and they're like, don't worry, you don't have to say anything, just have me testify. So the other brother comes in, and he goes, and he goes, I did it. And so they go, okay, well, the other guy's innocent, we scrubbed the whole trial, and then they have a new one for the other brother, and then that brother, they just, same thing, don't worry, don't do anything, we're just going to have the other brother go on trial. And so the other brother now comes in, and he goes, I did it. And then right at this point, they're like, they're like, what happened? Oh, they totally got them. But, oh, wait, this is our stop. And so the guy that's been listening in is like, no, wait. And then they're gone. And it's just the ending scene is just him just kind of like hammering on the train window at the two people that are like, what's his problem?
Hey, Ocean, remember those sweet nothings I was going to be whispering in your ear later? Yeah, no, I'm too mad at you now.
It's the Lewis Black routine where he says, if it hadn't been for my horse, yeah, I wouldn't have spent that year in college.
The homework assignment our teacher then gave us of that was write the rest of the story, what happened that was supposed to be told.
And then he gets back to his hotel room and drinks a half a bottle of vodka with a whole bottle of Vicodin. don't have that be the ending to a story, please.
That inspires me in a weird way to, I'm going to write a kind of meta story about characters that suddenly encounter the accidental blank page. Where the action is going along and suddenly the characters go, what the hell just happened? Why is everything white and nothingness? Everything. Where are we?
Did we die? Is this purgatory?
My Lord Cthulhu, have I forsaken you? Wait, stuff suddenly happening.
I would love if I had the ability to forsake Cthulhu.
So for those who are listening and can't see this, but Night Eyes is showing off his t-shirt, which is one for Deep One's Coffee.
Yes.
It has the Elder sign on it.
Yes, for those who are listening and can see, I am amazed in what powers you have.
Are we going to argue about whether the star or the tree is
star?
The
no. Tree. Star tree. No, it's just original and mint. If you've seen that wonderful advertisement on YouTube that the guys did for Elder Sign as a medical commercial.
Oh, wow.
You have to, okay, listeners and everyone in this circle, you have to look it up. Just look up Elder Sign on YouTube and look for the thing that looks like a medical commercial. It is hysterical, and these guys have done a couple of them. Funny as hell. There's one for the Necronomicon that looks like a commercial for the Book of Mormon. But it's the Necronomicon.
I was going to say, like, oh, like, we need a Necronomicon musical. I'm like, oh, we have Shoggoth on the roof. Never mind. That's yeah.
So, I have a question, actually, for all of the authors that are sitting around here, and for those that just attended panels, those that were running panels, what was your favorite moment? For those that were attending our various running panels, what was yours? Has this been covered yet on the...
It has not, I don't think.
We talked a bit about
some highlights. Mentioned how we thought panels went, but I don't think we picked any favorites.
We talked a good chunk about the bad erotica panel.
Oh, yes, I've heard. So good.
And kudos to the people who ran that for taking it to the next level and turning it to an audience participation, just full-on Rocky
Horror.
I want
to come back next year.
I need a DeLorean so I can go back in time and have been there.
I hope New Jersey comes next year.
We need him back.
That was amazing.
That is how you become legend.
Absolutely.
From what you've described. Like, I'm going to go back and tell stories about this guy, and I wasn't even there. It's going to be like a game of telephone. It's like he was 12 feet tall with a New Jersey accent. He also had antlers and wings and a dolphin tail.
We didn't see him come in. He was just there in the line.
He had blue fur and blue eyes.
His voice of a bird had swallowed gravel.
It was silent but deadly, like a mime with a knife.
Just
and he spoke at the speed of light. If you slowed it down to the speed of gravel, the speed of butter microwaved on a plate.
So you guys know I actually had to pay for that PDF, right?
I said that.
Cost me a whole 99 cents.
Yeah, you got your money.
But shit, it was 99 cents.
Yeah, our volume 8 was like $3.
Wow.
I know.
There's a volume 8.
We speculated on this. Man. Do you think that after that panel, there's a small Anthrocon bump and then the sales for that book?
Yes,
and probably. Year, he gets a few sales. See, I wonder if he ever wonders why. But my actual question.
So in addition to the wonderful moment of everything being shifted one letter to the right, the other moment was from Giannis, and he said the best line. Mary Sue piloting the good ship Authorial Convenience.
Wow!
Yes.
Oh, that's getting written down on my phone now.
Just Tiernan tweeted it. You just gotta find it.
All right. Yeah.
But it was just so perfect for the moment.
What? That was during Submit and Publish, wasn't it?
It was during Submit and Publish, yes.
See, this is why I like going to the Submit and Publish. Not because I'm usually picking up new things, but because it usually just ends up with three of the publishers just complaining and telling the most craziest stories about, like, oh god, just please don't do this, or else you will be the horror story for next year's panel.
I actually was on the Submit and Publish panel at Rainforest a couple years back with Kyle, Buck, and myself. We were the most cynical and bitter people ever, and Kyle was trying to be cheerful, and eventually he just threw up his hands and started snarking.
That's beautiful.
Because he had just lost his temper after the third. In my story that I want to submit to Heath, and he was like, that's it. Nope. Hands up, and he started snarking.
And here's the thing. For those of you listening who have not, like, personally talked to Kyle or personally met him, the man is patience personified. He is the living avatar of the emotion of patience.
No.
And it's in a good way, in a very good way.
No. That's Jacoby.
Jacoby
is more patient than Kyle.
Jacoby is more patient than Kyle.
Oh, okay.
So Kyle's patient. Kyle's
it's a lot easier to break Jacoby, though. Like, a lot easier to break. Sorry, Jacoby, by the way, listening at home.
But I should say, Kyle keeps social decorum to the utmost degree. And when that starts to break, other authors just find somewhere else to be.
It takes
popcorn
a lot.
And a black shield.
It takes a lot to break it, at least from everything I've seen. It takes a lot.
Whenever if you actually hear Kyle swear, you know something shit has gone down.
I've actually heard him once.
Yeah.
And it was involving when he was judging Iron Author.
And you now have 1 minute to reach minimum safe distance.
Minimum safe distance was when he wrote a score that was an irrational number. So, Rikoshi, let's go that way.
Wait, what?
Your favorite moment.
Oh, my favorite moment from a panel this con was probably when Rukus described what fist jacking was to the adult writing panel on Friday night. I'm not going to repeat it because it's foul. It sounds like it just means fisting, but it doesn't. It means so much more, evidently.
You're all Googling this right now. I know you've got another
like, let it be on your own head if you Google fist jacking. I'm just going to say that. That's my disclaimer.
Just, you know what fisting is. You know what jacky it is. And then we're done.
When you stare into the internet stares back into you.
The fact that Rukus did that with an entirely straight face was what was even scarier.
Had to quote Rukus on this. It was actually at the beginning of the adult writing panel, which was, shame is not a sensation I feel very often. Which might be like the most Rukus thing I've ever heard Rukus say.
And yet we had her feeling shame by the end of the panel.
Really? Did you have a scepter ringing a bell for her?
No, she actually ended up feeling shame, and she was confused.
It's like, what?
I think this is what pain feels like.
Yeah, what up, Captain Hammer reference? Boom, 2015. Yeah.
Go for it.
It was good.
It's a classic now.
It is.
Yeah.
Because everything is a classic a lot more quickly now.
The hammer is my penis.
I can't believe it.
Nice timing.
As host Elsaf rides through the podcast, Ocean's talking about dicks.
It's just like, this weekend, I've heard worse.
I've seen some shit, man.
Rob?
I think my favorite, as an attendee, I would say that my favorite event was probably a non-event. I think full credit to the people running the panels. They did a very good job of avoiding that thing that happens when it's the repeated question about the story that I'm writing that is transparently like My Little Pony crossover.
Right, yeah.
That entails like three or four questions in succession. The panels were all incredibly well administered and run in terms of just keeping the flow and making them very kind of very informative and very, very well handled.
I was quite surprised. I don't know if I was just really good at squashing them, but I didn't feel we had too many of them, or they were at least worded in such a way that we were able to talk about it generically.
So we've spent years on the AC writing track, Giannisai, Christy, Chipotle, now Chipotle.
Mm-hmm. Watts.
Chipotle, depending on what name you want to use. We spent years crushing that desire out of attendees. Right. So that they would not focus solely on their own work and try to make general questions using their work as a frame of reference.
I opened the very first panel by basically saying, please, if you've got these kinds of questions, ask us afterwards.
I wish I had recorded your whole intro because I'm going to go to RF and it's going to be very similar. And I'm just going to wish I had remembered that whole thing because...
I'm a teacher. This comes second nature to me. I had to resist the urge to tell people who were doing that, please see me after class.
Why? I've done it.
Yeah, you still have the occasional person who thinks they are on the panel also.
Yeah. I hate that person. Like, whoever it is at the time. But
I feel bad because I can be that person. That's why I'm trying to bite my lip.
I feel like I was at one point, too. I was that person. So
there's a difference, though. If you're another writer that we know or you know some of the panelists, you're not really pretending to be part of the panel. We're using you as an audience plant because we need somebody to say something intelligent.
My first panel I ever hosted was at a small convention, and I had two panels, and I had the one person who was very upset that I could not tell them where they could submit their baby fur material.
Oh, wow.
And I had to answer this question, and when I answered it not to their satisfaction, they got kind of really angry with me, and I'm like, well, I'm sorry, I don't know where they published that.
They got cranky, needed a binky.
Yes, yes.
Mark.
Nope, that's in.
Mr. Wolf. Today, my name is Mr. Wolf.
J actually stands for nothing. It's just a pretentious J because of Latinate spellings.
No, the J is representative of the fact that the I is usually changed to a J in spellings.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's it's
right. But it actually stands for
the Latin about Jehovah begins with an I.
That is part of the reference.
The J period is just pretentiousness.
I still like the fact that Boyce didn't know that your name was Yanis. He's like, he would always just say, well, Ianus.
Really?
Yes. We were going to go to RF and he's like, I can't wait to meet Ianus. And you're like, dude, please don't call him that.
Watch an episode of Buffy, the right episode.
I was going to say, is that the erotic sequel to I, Claudius?
No, he's going to hate me that I brought this up and it's going to be on the podcast again. Oh, hi, boys. Missed you.
Hi, boys.
Autocorrect needs to turn it to Eunice. Eunice, that's what autocorrect
is. Oh, Eunice?
To every time I try to
really?
Wow.
I added his name as a word.
Just to avoid autocorrect.
Up to you, I think.
Mog, as another attendee, I really liked how professional the panelists were. I'm serious. With the minimizing of the I wrote this because this is my story, this is my question about it, and generally diffusing that and spreading it out as writing in general, it was really well done, and I liked that a lot.
This wasn't our first rodeo.
Yeah, exactly.
And none of it's scripted. I don't think any of us actually walk in with a script. We kind of just figure it out because a lot of us are on the same wave like that for being in the communities forever.
I'm also, no script will survive first contact with the attendees.
Yeah.
I'm well aware of that.
I lost count of how many times on panels this con and at numerous other cons where one panelist will say something and the other panelists are like nodding their head
or just like
and start pointing.
Did you have something to add?
You just said it. It's like, that was the answer that this person needed. Now shut up and listen.
And after he said that, three people around the group nodded their heads.
That was hilariously meta.
It was.
I can't even script my intro.
We actually had it with the adult writing panel. You saw we had a little, for those of you who did not get to actually live through Anthrocon, we had on the left side of the writing track room during the adult writing panel a little contingent of some of the writers who are here who were kind of nodding emphatically with us. They're like, do we have to raise our hands and comment just to get people to shut up?
I was going
to
say, like, I just love your phrasing there. Like, you don't attend Anthrocon, you live through it.
in your tech panel, you made a comment. I'm just like, and you're like, what is that noise? Oh, it's an editor agreeing with me. Proficiently.
Yeah. Well, because at first I'm thinking, does someone have a question? Okay. Yeah.
Night Eyes.
I said this earlier in the thing, but when Oceanom fell, running.
Yes. I'm sorry. That was great.
That was one. His wings must have disappeared.
Yeah, I do what I can to make sure that everyone.
I thought he skinned his knee. I thought he was going to break some teeth. The bottle of soda went flying under the panel's chair. It was a great entrance.
I'm going to blame the bag. The bag had me off center. And I didn't want to crush anything, and, you know, I just want to make sure I make an entrance.
No, before you blame me the adrenaline, is it the bag or the adrenaline there?
A bag of adrenaline.
A bag of adrenaline, all right, yeah.
Adrenaline sack.
We'll go with that. It's the adrenaline
like a
Capri sack.
Sun.
That's exactly the image I was going for.
Thank you.
I also deeply enjoyed doing the Can I Read It panel, where I probably looked horribly red in the face, which is a good thing these things are not videotaped, because I just... bad. It was hilarious.
When you were red in your face, were your eyes red and your fur red?
No, thank God.
Due to copyright laws, we are not allowed to film a public reading of that particular novel.
People would like us to.
I know.
But we can't.
Oh, man.
We've actually even had people ask if they can, you know, get it simulcast into the main ballroom.
Really?
It is a very popular event.
You know, can we get
like,
it in?
I'm calling it, like, by 2020, it'll just be in the main ballroom.
Yeah. Seriously, there's
never a shortage of bad fiction. No.
That was only 2 hours, and we could have gone another two easily.
Oh, easy, yeah.
If we had been able to drop one panel from the schedule, we were going to start it at 10 and run it until 2.
Yeah, you could have done that easily.
We've actually, the first year we did it that way, and people were just like, but there's more of the book.
Well, the first year, we only had like an hour scheduled for it.
Oh, you're right.
And it was...
Can we get the main... I just want to see, like, the whole main ballroom full... going, yo. That would just be it. That would just, like, I just probably, like, back up a few steps.
I was gonna say, like, I think that's kind of like when, like, District 11 does the Katniss Everdeen
song. This would be like the large door, and you just hear this thundering bang, bang. Just like. Yeah,
we can work on that.
Let's do this.
See if you can get it in there as a main event.
Do that, and I'll be back.
It's gotten crazy enough. We can get more audience stuff. We just need to. I don't know if we want to read anything ahead of time, but we'll find something to do.
No. Well, that's the thing. As soon as people we were getting like people like we need this word, and we were like, okay, quickly, here's one. And then even like love, we never actually said love. We just started doing this, and then everyone just started catching on right away.
Since this is an auditory medium. They're doing the heart to the chest thing with two hands.
You know, I will see what we can do. I might be able to persuade KP to get us the main ballroom.
That would be...
Yes.
Problem is there's a dance going on, so that's actually the reason the attendance for that ends up falling is because of the dance. But it has to be after 8 o'clock because it's a little adult.
I understand that then, yeah.
But I might be able to just get us a bigger room for that because that's just hysterical.
Yeah, like we said, we got like halfway through and we're like, it's 1 o'clock and there's still a lineup around the door. So we're just going to, everybody gets 2 minutes now, just so other people can have a chance of reading.
Yeah.
Because like some people like that, like myself, I could have just probably read the whole chapter. I just eventually said, this word is hard to understand. I can't pronounce this word off the first chance, so I'll just stop there. And Rob was getting too happy.
I like your voice. I'm not going to be blamed for that. Good voice.
I still just like... That's probably been one of my highlights of the con, is just playing around with Rob. He's just like, oh, that voice, and we've just been tweeting back and forth about it.
Keep talking.
See,
keep talking.
Rob, how are you doing tonight? I've really enjoyed your time here. It's been really a great time meeting you, and I'm glad you came all the way from Berlin just to come to this con, and that I got to meet you, and we shared some candy, we shared some sugar.
You got some.
Rob, why are you crossing your legs?
No, you
I don't understand.
You need to stop.
I thought you would never wanted this.
Ocean, it's your turn for my favorite moments.
Oh, can I interject something real quick before we move on? Because there was another great moment, and I want to make certain it's preserved for posterity again. The mysterious traveling glass of water.
Yes! Oh! I forgot about that. What?
So all throughout Saturday, as panelists came in and kept going, there was this glass of water. It was a plastic glass of water.
Slip and I start Saturday, and we've got the first panel. It's 10 a.m. We're just stupidly tired. We're sitting down there, and I'm just like, there's like two glasses of water. They look half full, and I'm just like, well, I'm just being OCD, and I want to put these away somewhere, but I can't pour them. There's no garbage can. I can't get up in the middle of my panel, so while we're talking, I just pick one up and pour it into the other, and then I double cup it. I spill a little bit on the table, but I'm like, whatever, it will dry.
Yeah.
And so I was going to, of course, dispose of it later, but completely forgot. And then I come back later, like for another panel, and I notice that it's no longer there. It's now moved to the table in front, into the first row. And it's off to the left, off to the far left. Again, whatever, so the cup moved. And then I came back later, and the cup moved further. Throughout the day, it just kept sliding down the table.
This happened like three or four times throughout the day.
And so they're doing the submit and publish panel, and I just start breaking out laughing. And they're like, what? I'm like, this cup of water has traveled the entire row over here today. And Tim's like, wait. Was that the same cup of water that was here this morning? That's my water. Can I have it back? So we gave it to him.
To clarify this, he was saying, that was my water from last night.
Because he had been sitting there and he had been
from the
adult's water while trying to talk to people.
It was like trying to make it a bloom to spawn. and he
didn't do the kink panel afterwards, did he?
He was on the kink panel.
That was the last one. He took it and then he drank it. And the cup was no more.
Did he? I was on the other side from him, so I couldn't see.
I know he got at least half, and then I think he took the cup with him. Because if not, I would have loved to see where it kept going after that.
There was the pretzel today.
Pretzel.
I can explain what happened with the pretzel. It was before our formatting and tech panel, and I'm realizing I need caffeine and a snack before I go into this. So I go to the little concession stand at the back of the dealer's room, and I get a soft pretzel and a Dr. Pepper. And it's like, yes, I have my snack, I have my caffeine, I'm going to make it through this. And I get there, and someone has swiped some equipment we need 10 minutes before the panel would start. Someone came in, took a cable we needed for the specific panel we needed the projector for.
And that projector's been there all weekend.
Yeah.
All set up just for this last writing panel.
Pretty much. And we're probably going to use it for more panels next time because we do need a projector for that panel. But then they take the cable we actually need 5 minutes before. Someone randomly just decides, oh, this isn't doing anything without looking at a schedule or anything. So I'm running around trying to find a cable. We wind up having to sit at a different table because the only cable, and I have to give a shout out to Blythe, who was very helpful, and thank you, on the off chance you listen to this, thank you very much, Blythe, for getting us something we can work with. So we got an HDMI cable, we sat on the in the audience, basically, so because we didn't get one that would reach to our table. After all that, I've forgotten that I have my drink and my snacks sitting on the panelist table because we're at one of the audience tables. I go through the whole writing and technology panel explaining to people why they should buy Word and then how to use it once they buy it for writing stories and submitting them. And then I have to rush because I'm getting GroupMe messages from the mates saying, you must come to this restaurant because we've already saved a table. Okay. And thus, the pretzel and Dr. Pepper may still be sitting there for all of
some say as they are even to this day.
I
texted Temple about that. He never texted me back. What the frick?
The Western panel was asking about that. They were wondering where what that project was about.
Yes. We tried to let them know.
My favorite, besides everything else I've already mentioned.
And falling down?
And falling down.
Falling down was great, other than the fact that I wonder what I did to my foot, because it really hurt after that. I don't think I hit it, but I...
You jumped over a table.
Yeah. Jumped over tables before.
I think it was the foot he caught the screen.
Yeah, he fell into the projector screen.
The logic, I'm too late in the weekend and it just broke my brain.
I mean, the ridiculous of it is that's just me being me half of the time.
I can tell.
I had to stall because Ash wasn't there either, and it's I'm like, okay, well, I'm supposed to be doing this panel with two panels that are not here, and it's 2 minutes into the panel, so we just start talking. Ash shows up, walks in, and you just show it was great the whole.
Dun 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 dun.
The Chariots of Fire,
and then it's the Chariots of Fire theme, and then there's that sudden record scratch as the.
If you can edit a record scratch into this, that would be rad.
Yeah.
Don't know how to do that. I don't. I need a record scratch. I can. Do
and for those who wonder, kids, records were really big CDs. It spun a lot slower, and there was a needle that helped to play the music, and sometimes it would make that noise that you hear when something goes wrong.
At this point, you need to explain CDs, too.
That's true.
Damn it!
I had a comp prof who he would teach kids, like, intro to comp sci, and these were kids, you know, like, maybe 12, 15, and he was amazed at how quick they got it. They were like, wow, they were, like, getting if statements and while loops and all that. But they always had the same question. They were always confused about one thing. And they're like, what is that square thing on the save button? And he's like, oh my goodness, kids don't understand what micro floppies are. You know?
I had a good one in high school in the late 90s. I had to do a Spanish. This is why I never learned how to speak Spanish. I had a teacher, Spanish 2 teacher, and we had to listen to a concert. So I got a CD, which was okay, brought the CD in, and she asked me, did it play in the record player? I'm like, she had a CD player in her room, did not have any idea that there was a difference between a CD and a record. And I'm like, I was very floored at that time.
We're slightly off topic, but I wonder, like, you remember when CD drives were first there and people who didn't understand were like, I wonder if this is a coffee record.
Yeah.
I wonder if we've actually come back. And so now that people that don't own their CDs are going like, is this where I rest my arm?
hey, for AOL disc, that's all you ever did with them anyways.
Yeah. There was an entire website of what you could do with the floppies for that.
Okay, going back though, in addition to enjoying the panels, and as I've said a lot to many of you, is like, the only other time I've come to AC has been the worst con experience of my life because I didn't know anybody. We had a really crappy situation in the room where people would come in at 3 and flick the lights on and talk while people are sleeping, and we had our friend was a jerk and we had to pick up his porn form, and we missed the whole charity panel that Two and Kage go on. So this was much better because you guys are all here.
Thanks, porn friend.
Yeah, I know. We didn't even get any. No pain.
Not even a gig?
No.
Not even like an HJ of thanks? Sorry, I am really inappropriate tonight. I apologize.
Oh, welcome to Shit Writer Say.
This is why we like to
talk. Go on, the original, the first episode of Shit Writer Say has a horrible statement
yeah.
by me.
Oh.
I don't even know why that made it in.
You should go back and listen to a new podcast listeners.
I think what it was is I've just been so polite and measured on all of my panels so far, I'm just like... I've been polite and measured throughout most of this, and now I'm just like, it's late, I'm tired, I need to just start saying shit.
This is where family friendly ends.
But like, it's great to see you guys again. I love seeing you guys. I finally get to hang out with Slip, other than better than half an hour in an airport cafe as I'm waiting to board another plane. You know, I have a special guest that suddenly showed up out of nowhere. Ricky here, it was great to see. The best is like, you know what? I'm very happy that you are you. Like, I mean, like, the online you is the in-person you, and I was really afraid that you wouldn't be that, and that you really are incarnate of purple.
Yes.
Which is probably one of the best compliments I've ever got.
I totally get the whole, like, wings, no wings thing as well. It's just kind of like...
It's what the French would call a certain I don't know what. But, like, you have that.
I even
thank you to the two people who caught that.
I like that. No, that's good. Right. Like, I even tell people, like, I cannot get rid of them. And I went to, like, Night Eye saved me a Dark Natasha badge. And so I go down, and I'm showing her, like, this is my character. You don't have to do the wings. Like, you don't even. And she's like, oh, no, I really want to. And you're just like, and that's why I can't get rid of them.
Okay, like, I have antlers because I got a commission as a joke. And then, like, the artist who did the first picture was Sabretooth Ermine. She's like, oh, my God, you're like, your character looks so cute like this. You should totally stay like this. I'm like, no. This is, like, a one-off
too late.
Like, gag. No, and then, like, I post it, and, like, everyone who saw it was like, oh, my God, that's amazing. And, like, I think just people declared by fiat that, like, okay, I guess I have antlers now.
And now I just picture them just pushing you down to the ground and, like, super gluing them onto your head and, like,
oh,
shut up.
I thought
adorable.
You were going to say, like wood screws in my skull or something.
Quick, curl his tail up.
Is that
more.
How the husky tail ended up as well, just by fiat?
Yeah, well, it was, so... It's funny.
You
I
had to accessorize
this time. No, the antlers and the husky tail are actually simultaneous. Like they're both part of the same picture that started that. And like everyone forgets that that's part of it, that the whole husky tail. But it,
yeah,
whatever. I'm a nonsense animal.
Are headphones are to Tigrox as goggles are to antler fox?
They are. You'll notice in not in this one, but in these I get the forehead goggles.
Oh, we'll do a swap, and I'll have goggles, and you'll have headphones. And be like, what's going on?
Oh, we should totally do that, actually.
What?
Oh god, and like you should have my antlers, and I'll have your wings. Somebody write this down. So
we haven't recorded.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Ah, okay. The magic of technology. It's like I've forgotten.
I'm
not. Just
I've already
like
forgotten which that you said something at the beginning that I'm like I'm gonna have to quote that later, and I'm like I don't remember what it is, but I'm sure when I listen to it again, I'll be like, okay, that's what it is.
You're planning your next body swaptober, aren't you?
Oh god! Oh no!
You
with Ewolf last year?
Park dolphin or?
Oh no!
Men's rights. Men lunch.
Can we get that picture framed?
I took very careful care of it. But yeah, like no, Riggy, Rob, it's been great. Your voice comments are hilarious. Mog, you and your mustache. I still haven't seen your BMX bike. And then Night Eyes, like, just you know, where is he? There he is. And just sit down at the lobby. Just you. And then you're just like, you're so boisterous. I'm like, yeah, I told you this.
We're lucky he doesn't drink coffee like me.
It's just, like, I find the people really make a con.
Yeah.
You
know? It does.
Really is the people. And so having such wonderful people just has made this wonderful for me.
Cool.
Is this the part where, as far as people, is where I have to duck out, actually, unfortunately. This has been a lot of fun, you guys. Thank you for, like, bringing me on this.
No, thanks for showing up.
Glad we could be here for part of you being here.
I was going to say, like, I don't want to make it weird, but I also don't want people to, like, why did Rikoshi stop talking when he, like, wouldn't shut up before? And or people wouldn't stop asking him questions.
He disappeared somewhere.
Somewhere. It's heard Vorjo.
Yeah, I went for the subtle.
Yeah, and I didn't.
Yeah,
we were just. I mean,
Rikoshi is anything but subtle.
Yeah, no, that's not true.
Oh, we're at me.
Yes.
Honestly, what I keep coming back to, because there were a lot of good moments in panels that other people were hosting and that I was sitting on, just the beginning of the submit and publish panel, as we got started and realized one of our panelists has all three sheets out. One of our panelists during Submit and Publish was Jerome. And I say it that way to indicate there was a lot, not like falling down, but definitely tipsy completely.
Oh, well, it's good thing you didn't come to the bad reading of Erotic part.
Someone brought
no,
cider.
Here's the no, it was water in that cup.
Yeah, exactly.
Water. Yeah. Yes.
That's what they call it.
Apple juice. A toast to plausible deniability.
Yes.
It did not. It was a bottle of balls. I don't know what you're talking about.
And just realizing that it's like, okay, this is going to be interesting. And it actually helped because he was at that like perfect level of just enough of the filter is gone. So we all kind of, you know, the two of us kind of followed suit and basically went, okay, we're not going to sugarcoat stuff for you people. We're going to tell it like it is, and this is the stuff that will get you kicked out. This is the stuff that will get you blacklisted. This is the stuff that will...
That was a wonderful panel, too.
It worked out well. Maybe we need to pick one panelist. It can't be the ones that don't drink. But for that particular panel, we need to pick one panelist and go, all right, these are yours. Well, consume them all before
that. That was the best, too. It's because, like, one of us here has been drinking, and two of us don't drink. So...
Guess one who? Of these, one of these things is more drunk than the other.
Three guesses in the first two don't count.
But on average, we were all only slightly tipsy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tipsy with enjoyment.
But no, and just that wound up being a fun panel. And apparently, people felt the information was very useful.
Mm, it was.
We got a couple comments, people saying, thank you so much.
Like,
so.
As much as there is a point for tact and, you know, being informative, just kind of having that slight snark, like, don't do this, and a publisher is, like, slamming their fists on the table, really, really sends the message home.
Yes, allow me to repeat my message from the science fiction panel. That please do not use chaos theory as your catch-all excuse for allowing anything to happen.
Oh,
yes. I like that we all have our small quirks, and I think the audience even enjoys this a little. Like I said, like even the dots. Oh, yeah. When I would start ranting about dots, people, you could see people were like starting to sit up straight, and they're like, oh, this is going to be good.
Oh, and you know what? I'll tack something onto that thing about chaos theory. If you're going to look to fiction for what chaos theory is, Jeff Goldblum is a horrible example. I don't know if Michael Crichton is okay, but he seems slightly... Okay, no, he's not. Fuchs shakes his head furiously, and he is the science one, so no. You know what? Do research in actual textbooks. They're the big, heavy versions that cost a lot more than fiction.
I'm restraining myself from trying to say too much now, because it would probably be bad for the podcast.
Oh, no, please, go. You got 5 minutes.
Yes.
Go.
No. Yeah. Okay. Not gonna do it.
Ash? Oh dear. So I had a lot of good moments. One of my best favorite moments was not being on every panel. That was amazing. But I think my favorite one comes from the adult writing panel, the longer one with Ken Hirasaki. And Rukus, where we are.
He had the glasses.
Yeah, well, he had the glasses, he just didn't have the otter hat.
Hannah Hotana.
Where we had somebody ask us about, have you all read Omaha the Cat Dancer? No. Well, my question about Omaha the Cat Dancer is I seem to think that everything is excessive. This is the first time in years my English degree that my parents paid a lot of money for has finally come in handy.
Not the first time, just a very good example.
But it was having to sit there and snark at somebody with, well, yes, because Omaha the Cat Dancer is a product of a sexually repressed pre-internet era in which this idea of and it was just very long for, I think, were you in the audience for that one?
No.
Okay. You guys were unloaded my academic discussion about the existence of an evolution of sex as a culturally
speaking as a fellow academic, it was glorious.
Yeah.
And I was just making it up as I was going along. I think it was the moment she sat there and kind of went...
And there... Because I remember, again, not going to give any descriptions or anything like that. Half of them weren't even questions. It was just, you know, I want to climb up and spout off in my seemingly 19-year-old about whatever. And it just doesn't work. If we're there to answer questions... Propose an interrogative statement based on information you would actually like about the craft of writing.
There are always those people at the panel who want to talk and provide a comment to what you said without asking a question.
Right, mm-hmm. But what made that my favorite moment was the looks on all of the little writing contingent in the left corner. The academia comes out, and you're all like, wow, that's right, Ash actually has a degree in all of this.
Yep.
But, I also loved when you and Ricky started going on about transitive verbs.
Oh, yeah.
I love that because you're like, you know, I don't know if we should keep doing this. And the editors are like, no, please.
Well, it was talk supine to me.
Yeah.
And we were just being out, and we were talking about active and passive voice. And it was the first time the entire con I had heard it come up in the best way possible. Because Ricky then did an entire couple of sentences in passive voice to prove a point. He should never do it again.
Or he should do it some other time.
And Rookus was just staring at us going, are you two done yet? Are you done waving your grammar cocks?
The fact that she was between both of you just made it even better. Do you have one
next?
This has been a great con. This is probably one of the best cons I've been to in a long time, and probably my best top one now. Probably my favorite part is this. I never would have ever thought I would ever be able to sit in this group and talk with all the authors here. A lot of great writers here and great people who work on editing and stuff like that. And I thank you for all the great work you do. And I will do my best to read more because I don't read all that much as I should. It's probably a good time.
You.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to pause you for a second. How many times this con did I swear at the audience of, do you people even read?
Oh, yeah.
I saw at least four. Now, yeah, one of which was for Omaha the Cat Dancer. Yeah. And I will point out that I at least raised my hand partially because I knew of it. I just actually haven't had the book in my hand to read it.
We have every single one of them at home, and I haven't read them.
I don't live near you.
Got every issue if you want to borrow some.
But, okay, you may continue.
So, yes, that is my that's my double A statement. I'm Tantrum McNally, and I don't read as much as I should.
I'm Tantrum McNally.
One book at a time.
All right. Yeah, and I was part of the Fursuit Parade, first time outside in Pittsburgh.
That parade was amazing.
Oh my God.
That was great.
Yes.
Involved the community. Absolutely.
Yeah,
that was great.
For the people that weren't here, they actually had blocked off one of the streets. And if you see the convention center, it's over top of a road that's underneath. And they had blocked off that road so the suitors could come down one side of the convention center, walk around almost like a U-turn, and then go up the other side. And at that point, there was like at least, I don't know, like
5,000
people
said,
were right.
5,000 people turned out. There was 1,000 standing where I was.
Oh, right. Okay. I was only looking over. I probably didn't see all the people underneath.
Oh, yeah.
That
underneath,
would be
they
why.
Were stretching all the way
yeah,
down.
Yeah. I have a picture of just the corner. And there were just people, just all these people, just cheering. And like, they had a bunch of I Love Anthrocon songs as all the paraders are going on. You're like, wow, that's really cool. And then you're like, none of these people are actually attending the con. This is the public.
Regular mundane people.
And that was just kind of amazing. Just a bit like, just a wow moment. Like, whoa.
The city estimated 5,000 spectators for the outside portion of the Fursuit Parade.
And to give some idea of this, apparently this sudden influx of people into this small area caused the local Ben and Jerry's to run out of ice cream, and Tonic ran out of all food.
Yeah, yeah. They're like 95% of the menu is gone.
Like the last 10, 20, 30 people in line were like, I want this flavor. We don't have that. I'll have this flavor. We don't have it. Okay, you know what? Here's a cup. Just put whatever you've got in there. three scoops, whatever. Okay, some sprinkles. Awesome. Great. Next guy.
Bill's, the Burger Bill or whatever it's called in the Westin, Manji and I and Rikoshi and one of Rikoshi's friends went for boozy milkshakes because they have boozy milkshakes. And she came back to the table and said, oh, I'm sorry, we're out of milkshakes.
Yeah.
Like, not we're out of like this kind of ingredient. No, we're out of milkshakes.
In past years, they used to eat out the Steel City Saloon, didn't they? They would eat everything. This is one of the restaurants that used to be next to Fernando's.
Oh, the Steel City Diner?
Yeah, Steel City Diner.
Yes.
They in past years, when they were still a thing, they had to stock up. So everyone would go there for breakfast, lunches, et cetera, and so on.
I'm actually going to tell a quick anecdote if I can.
Go for it.
So most of you know, I have attended Anthrocon since... Well, I'm 32 now, and I think I've only ever missed one. So that gives everybody a context here. I remember when Anthrocon came to Pittsburgh, I was actually in college at the University of Pittsburgh, and I was the dining guide crew, and restaurants did not believe us when we said you will double and triple your orders. And the first year Anthrocon was here, it ate every restaurant out of house event by Saturday afternoon. No one believed us except for Fernando's and Steel City Diner. Because they were used to conferences. But when I finally left doing the dining guide several years later, it was the restaurants were all like, so what's your forecast? And we're going to just add about 800 more and hope that we have enough people. But, yeah.
And now it's not just attendees, it's the spectators. So there's... Yeah. Admittedly, it's kind of the sort of problem that the restaurants want to have of all this business. I don't envy them the logistics.
No, you take... we had 6,300 attendees, 6,300 plus attendees this year, plus the 5,000 spectators. That's amazing. That's just
I heard that
incredible.
Like after the parade that there was a huge spike in registration that people went and registered in
passes.
Just so they could go see more just walking around the con. So.
Yeah. Also that number 6,300 attendees does not include staff.
Right. Yeah.
And doesn't include guests and guest of honor, and dealers are excluded from that number. So yeah, you're not actually dealers and dealers assistants are not part of.
Well, there's like 200 or 300 of those at least,
number.
Isn't there?
You're not part of the attendees number. You're part of the overall attendance number, but not the attendees number. There's a lot of weird accounting that goes on. Like, Hugh doesn't actually count as an attendee, neither do Giannis and I.
So anyway, to finish up my thing, listening to all the stories here, like, people go, oh, the writing panel's so boring, I don't want to go to them. They have such great stories here about the things that go on in writing panels and stuff like that, so... They are really good to come to, and if you ever wish to expand your ability to understand reading and writing and editing and any of that, it's really great to come to, and I would recommend it.
So I mean, oh geez, I don't know what even to put it down to one thing. Like, so much has been covered. For me, mostly just because living in the part of Ontario I do, I don't run into writers at all. Everything I do with everybody is just talking to everyone's cartoon Animal Square on Twitter or whatever. So, like, no one's even, you know, I don't even get faces. So to come down here and actually meet people who's
you broke
editing,
the magic.
Who's writing. I know, yes. Like, you guys, you took all your fursuit heads off. And I love it. So, I mean, that's the... For me, I mean, it stretches through the whole thing, so it doesn't put out at one point, but just finally meeting all of the people I've been working with and whose stuff I've been reading and whose editing I've been seeing, you know, for years. You know, I've been, like, reading Ricky's stuff for, like, 3 years, and I've been reading Yannis' anthologies for, like, you know, 3-4 years and all that. So that's the coolest thing. But if I have to put it down to one thing, it has already been said, but honestly, we need to weaponize Jersey Guy. I'm gonna call Fuzz about this. We'll find out who he is. They have a back catalog of stuff with Bad Dog Books. We need to get him in here. We need to get all
Summer
the fantasy
Hill by
stuff.
Jersey Guy.
Well, any of the fantasy titles. Honestly, we get him to like read through Roar. You're gonna double that, man.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I don't care what platform you put it on. That was serendipity, and yeah, we're gonna bottle that while it's still good.
Does anybody know what his name is?
No, we'll find out.
He came from the mist and left.
You know, it's like you put a piece of art on Twitter, it's like, I have no idea who did this. Who did this? And you get like 6 people like say it was Ush in this year and this month and this thing and this page.
And
we'll find out who that guy was.
10 minutes from now on Twitter, suddenly it's gonna be full of questions of where is Jersey Guy?
I'm gonna ask the question and maybe we'll get the answer before. But I have no service, so
well there with that.
Okay.
So I kept my nose out of the writing room, largely, this year. I wasn't on any panels, and I know that I get really excited. And when I get really excited, I go beyond audience plant, I become annoying. So I didn't want to annoy my friends, the writers, or the people who run the writing track, because I might want to be on panels someday. So... I just kept my nose out of there. I did pop in. I did listen in a few times. There was a lot of good stuff going on. What I did do instead, which was fun, because I have a story in Fang 6, which came out at this con, and I spent some time behind the Fur Planet table supplementing the hypnotic powers of Sales Corgi, trying to get people to buy Fang. And I made a couple of sales and I got to sign a couple of books, which I don't get to do very often, which was a lot of fun. And actually, my favorite thing, though, my favorite moment of the con, I actually got to meet the author of one of my top favorite furry novels in existence. And the author is Ben Goodrich, author of one of my favorite books, Found One Apocalypse. It's been out for several years from Fur Planet. It's this sort of kooky space thing. And like they're early on, there are space pirates who are really lousy at their job, and their entire fleet consists of of space ice cream trucks and hot dog stands they've been able to steal. So that kind of it's kind of like Douglas Adams without trying to be Douglas Adams, which is refreshing because people try to be Douglas Adams and you're not. Don't try. They hovered in the air exactly the way a brick wouldn't. Don't do that. But I had a lot of fun, and I get to spend, you know, outside panel time with a lot of people that I'd only kind of vaguely talked to or, you know, met briefly or, you know, talked a lot on Twitter or Skype or Telegram or GroupMe or... there are too many chat services, furry fandom. We need to consolidate, please.
Bring back Trillion.
Yeah. You know, Trillion is still a made product.
Yeah, but it doesn't have, like, the popular things now, really.
Yeah, it does. It has everything. Maybe that's
bring back brand. ICQ. We'll all go back to ICQ.
There we go.
I still remember my number and my password, thank you.
Oh, jeez.
But, yeah, I had a blast, and I'm glad I finally was able to get out of the Westin and get over here to yammer at the mic for a minute.
Well, anybody got anything left?
Everybody go?
Yeah, everybody's gone.
We went on. Start with me, went all the way around. We had Tantaru who did the jumping over to...
That's what I do, kangaroos, I hop over everybody.
And then you too. So yeah, we got everyone.
Yeah, there was a lot of positive feedback about the running track that came in already that I've already gotten back from people.
Well, good.
Yeah.
We'll have to share that with me.
There was one little complaint that came by. Oh. We didn't have enough time to talk about porn. The goal writing panel's too short.
It's three bloody hours with 2 hours devoted to the basics and 1 hour devoted to strangeness.
Same request. They no longer send me that one. I just know it comes up every year.
Okay. I'm going to take one moment as we end this out to do the shameless plugs. When you go to your next con, look for Rabbit Valley's representative, buy copies of Trick or Treat, Trick or Treat 2 Historical Halloween, Pulp 2 Pod Tales of Adventure. Yeah. Buy those. Those are the anthologies that I edit, and I'd really like it if you read the stories in them, because there are a lot of good writers in there, and I'd also like a little bit of money that I get when you buy them.
I was going to say about the money.
Yeah. Also, go to the Fur Planet table. Buy Abandoned Places, because you'll get to read one of my stories in there. Buy Fang 5. You'll get to read something from there.
Fang 6, which is edited by Ash.
I'm not in 6.
Nobody.
Buy 6 because it is edited by Ash.
Buy 6
because Slip is in it.
Slip Wolf begins the book, and Night Eyes ends the book.
See, I was going to let other people do their shameless plugs. That's the thing.
We could just list off all the books and...
buy everything.
How many heats do we have to buy?
A lot.
No. The thing I wish people would do is if they pull an Ash again, which is come by the table with a big cardboard box and say, one of everything, please.
Well, like Fuzz has said that there are people that come, and maybe AC is probably their only convention. They come, and they're like, so what have you guys put out in the last year? And they're like, well, this. And they're like, okay, I'll take that.
Yep.
And they just clunk, shunk.
I am actually one of the people, Fuzz and Tieran were very sad that there was a ban on me purchasing books this year because we're moving.
I will not make another 2 book boxes. The 20 we already have are heavy enough.
I am immune to the powers of the Hypnocorgi, but my OCD requires I own the entire catalog.
Well, this is still doable. Then you pull into Bad Dog Books and you click the one of everything. But
actually, there's a button that's coded for Manji, which is called Complete Collection. And when I log in, there's a button that says Complete Collection for Ash. It puts everything I don't own in the cart.
Okay, so
their website has its own feature for me.
I'm calling you on that. I'm looking forward tonight.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, when Inhuman Acts comes out, they should definitely buy that.
They really should. Like, really. You should, like, everyone should buy a copy.
Yeah.
Please. And then tell me it's so good because you bought so many copies, you sent a message that you want a second one right away.
That's the thing we should request everyone does. Please, people... We need more reviews of books.
Feedback.
We really do. We want to hear that we have done good jobs, and in those places where we have failed, we want to hear about it so we can fix it for the next time.
But we mean book reviews. We don't mean high school book reports.
Yes.
Not summaries. Summaries are not reviews.
Thank you. Honest critique, yes.
Playing for laughs is not a review. You are not Yahtzee. You are not the Nostalgia Critic. You are not James Rolfe, the Angry Video Game Nerd. And I know that because I am none of those people either. so please don't try to be them.
I would appreciate them. Actually, you can do that to my books all you want.
Give it a rating, yeah. State what you liked, state what you didn't, and give evidence behind each of those, please.
I think at one point I actually wrote a paper on someone's book and they were very unhappy with me because I ended up saying, I actually don't like it. Well, on a technical level, it's actually quite good.
Can I ask, like, with a few of you, because obviously you guys do anthologies, and without referencing any other reviewers or reviews in the fandom, how do you prefer someone would review an anthology? A hush fell over the crowd.
We're all
this makes
about our
terrible audio work because we're all quiet thinking.
Can I throw something in that I heard secondhand?
Go ahead.
If you're going to review something with erotic content, a mix of erotic and non, don't put in the review that you didn't want to read the erotic stuff because you don't like erotic stuff. You know what you bought.
So, you know. So I can't buy Trick or Treat and just read the trick?
You could, but if you're going to review it, don't say, I read the first
thing. What if the first thing I say is, I bought Trick or Treat because I just wanted to read the horror stories, not the erotica, and I will be reviewing the trick side of this.
Then you have that provided
perfectly fine.
As long as you state that at the beginning.
You
right?
are setting an expectation of what we're expecting to read.
Here's the biggest thing, and I'm going to use the food metaphor. If you know you don't like chocolate cake, for whatever reason, you find it too rich, too whatever, if you buy a box of something labeled chocolate cake, and then you force feed it to yourself, knowing that it's chocolate cake, you don't get to complain about the fact that it was chocolate cake and that's why you didn't like it. That's the simple thing as part of reviewing. Now, if you admit, I liked everything in this meal except the chocolate cake, so I won't be reviewing the chocolate cake, that's fine. But just be, yeah.
So, again,
I have a comment. I think for a lot of writers, especially if there are a reasonable number of stories in a book, I don't know how you would review The Current Roar, since there are a mega number of stories, but it's good to mention all the writers because the ones you don't mention that you don't hate or don't like, they kind of always wonder what happened. And it's happened to everybody. If you have a story in a book and the review doesn't mention you at all, you always kind of have this sad feeling of like, well, there we go.
We actually discussed this on the next episode of Fangs and Fonts that will come out, as we actually discussed that as a whole topic.
Here's another thing I will say about reviewing anthologies. Whether you mention all the writers or don't, because I know some reviewers are just naturally going to give, you know, a highlights version, things like that. That's okay. Do not allow in your review, because there are a lot of people who put a lot of work into this anthology, glaring inaccuracies and misrepresentations of content. You don't have to mention everyone, but the ones you do mention prove you actually read the book before you review it. That's one of the biggest, and it is about the fact that respect the work someone put in by proving you actually read it, even if you didn't necessarily like it.
Like, to your comment, like, that mentioning every author, I don't think you need to do that.
Well,
but if how many stories are in Fang 6? Sorry to cut you off.
There are 7.
Like, that I can understand. That should be doable. That's enough that you should be able to give a nice critique on each. But I don't know where the rule of thumb is, like, is the X number where you can stop mentioning them.
Oh, yeah, with Roar, I don't know how you would. That's an insane.
Or you're
going to
pick up the highlights and the highs and lows and make a passing, sweeping generalization about the rest.
Yeah. I think it's, though, how do I want to say it? It's interesting when people do this. If you feel, try not to get lazy, I guess is what I say, because if you can talk about another author or two, they will appreciate it.
I will say this, and this was said on the podcast that isn't out, which, if you're listening to this now, was the one released before this. The reviews are not specifically meant for us as authors. They're very nice to have. They're very nice for us to reflect on if we do have that mentioned. But I think we have to remember that they are not here for us. They are here for others to read, go, oh, this book looks very interesting. Maybe I should purchase this. Or, this is a book about Halloween. Oh, I don't celebrate Halloween and I don't like Halloween. Maybe I don't think I will spend my money on this.
Yeah.
You know, we definitely love to hear people give us reviews. Like, we are people that put passion into our work, so feedback is very crucial about it. But I think we have to remember that, again, they're not reviewing it for our sake. They're reviewing it for everyone else's.
And one more thing on the anthologies. I don't see a lot of things in reviews. I see, like, individual stories talked about in reviews for anthologies. I rarely see people talk about the collection as a whole. Like, the order things are placed in. Does it work together?
Yeah, that's actually a thing that is skipped in reviews. A good review, quote-unquote good review, would include the construction of the anthology itself and then the individual merits of the story. Actually, there is one reviewer in the fandom who did that with an anthology, where he reviewed first the organization of the stories and commented on how it actually weakened some stories based on their placement because of the strength of the other stories surrounding it, and then went through individual reviews of the stories, wherein he actually got the review of an analysis of my story wrong. He did a species swap on a character, and I got a preview of the video before I went live and went, ahem. He went, sorry.
Oh, is that
I think a good example is The Furry Future. The reviews that we've seen for that, that we've seen different reviews that people have done in it versus one that everyone just kind of blinks at and gets very confused at. But all of them have at least, I think, have noticed a small trend in that they've all, one of the flaws, not really a big flaw, they've noticed is that there's a large amount of stories that involve just persecution. And there's a large amount of them in this, and they're just kind of like, this isn't a horrible thing, but it's just something that we've noticed that there was, it almost seemed too many. And that maybe, I don't know, my thought's done. Mark.
So, you mentioned organization. It's something that actually, I think, as a culture, we've kind of lost analysis of things as collection, as sort of a thing that gets reviewed. Look at music. Now we buy track by track.
Yeah.
You don't typically, I mean, it's not as typical to buy an album and listen to it front to back the way they used to be designed to be listened. They would order the tracks so that there was a certain feel, a certain essence to it, and anthologies have that as well, if they're done well, and that gets kind of left out of a lot of reviews.
I know for Inhuman Acts, because I had such a large, it's almost 50-50 for detective and non-detective stories, that I was like, okay, I'm going to want to space these out. And then, again, there's such a large amount, I think it's 70% of it is first-person view. So again, I used that to mix it up. So I then said, like, this story is going to go here, this story is going to go here, and then I had one or two other that I really wanted to go. And then the rest I started to at least try to alternate between the two, using a combination of, like, word length, so it's like you don't have, like, three really long stories and then three really short ones, but we'll see how it works out.
When I was laying out Fang, I actually had to space the emotional gut punches, which is why two people had to end and begin the book.
I also made a darkness meter for Inhuman Acts. I'm like, dark, and then we get a little lighter, then we get darker, and then a little lighter, and so, like, that's my opinion. It might not turn out that way, but I hope it does. How do you guys figure out for heat?
I have no idea how we do any of that stuff.
Oh, not even with you, eh?
No, I have no idea who does. I have no idea who decides that even.
Interesting.
I can, for every anthology that I've edited so far, there are times when I have Scrivener open, because that's how I compile things, because it's such a handy way to compile anthologies, and I'm just staring at the order of stories and moving them around in their post and trying to think, okay, if that one comes this way and that, but those two are a little too similar to be right next to each other, they need a buffer, but then if I move that, there's a lot of effort that goes into the order of stories and what, and here's the thing, you can't have a rubric for anthologies because each anthology has its own. Pulp was a completely different animal from putting together the first Trick or Treat and figuring out their orders. And yeah, and I know other editors go through the same thing. I know that's a...
Fang 5 is a nightmare to put in order because the stories were all over the map with a theme like Best Frenemies. I had stories all over the map, and then Fang 6, I controlled that by giving everyone a theme they loved. Or hated. I couldn't tell which.
Okay, still, you guys still have to answer my question here about how to review an anthology. Do you...
At this point, I'd just like to see more reviews.
Completely.
I would like people to... Because this is the thing that just bugs me, that I will... I am behind the table. I sell people books. I can tell they enjoy them. And then they go away. And I never hear anything from them again.
Or they'll come back and just buy more.
Like, yeah, that's it. Like, a year later, they'll come back and they'll buy something more. So, you know, they must have liked something in it, but that's all you ever hear on these things. Mm-hmm. I have some stories in the fandom that go back something like 12 years. And there's one of them I know that got at least one review. And there's another one that I have no idea if anyone ever read that story besides the publisher. And it bugs. Nobody ever cared for Gregory Wraithome. That was Anthrolations 8.
The Walk. I think I might have actually read it.
Woohoo! Someone actually read it. But
well, yeah, see, but that's the thing. We shouldn't be like, yay, someone read my story. Okay. Shouldn't be the highlight.
But that's part of the issue with not mentioning authors. I understand it is insane, but you don't hear anything. Nobody mentions your name. You just kind of sit there and you're like, well, what happened?
Well, because part of the problem in the fandom is that, at the moment, 99% of the feedback that writers in the fandom get is from other writers and their editors. Mm-hmm. And we have no idea what the general audience tends to think of our work, unless you have to be someone like Kyle or Ricky who can pull in enough reviews.
Business Roo with his business tie on. Maybe this is a business incentive problem. Like, maybe we should incentivize customers to give us reviews. Like,
actually, I have seen places that do primarily online business. I've seen a couple that do that where they have like a point system for discounts on other products, and you don't get a whole lot of points for doing one review. But it encourages people to do multiple reviews for the rewards, you know, the club card, the online club card, basically. Not a bad idea to try and put something like that together, because you mentioning that makes me think it could work for furry publishing.
Especially since we're such a tight community, we could say, you know, start passing things out at cons, saying, you know, this is you're, you know, part of the club for Planet or Rally, whoever want to implement it.
I want to ask, like, you two guys, since you guys mostly do just free online work, is that one of the bonuses that you really like, is that you generally do get a lot more feedback from your readers?
Actually, no. In more recent times, we've found that our comments and reviews have gone down significantly, where our earlier works were critiqued quite a lot. In recent times, they're hardly even talked about. You know, you get one or two comments on a story that has 500 views.
I would disagree with that to a point, and I think actually that becomes slightly a disincentive to syndicating stuff or to putting it in anthologies or to looking for print publication, is that if I put something online, I can at least be guaranteed some degree of feedback. Whereas again, yeah, I mean, I have stuff in print. I could not tell you that literally anyone has read it, which then becomes a disincentive to doing it at all, even to the degree that feedback is useful for self-improvement or for figuring out what you're doing right or what people are enjoying and responding well to. When that feedback comes from a very small circle of fellow writers and editors, that is itself kind of self-limiting. And I think that's there's kind of an overlap that we've kind of failed to bridge between those two worlds, because I think people either wind up committing themselves almost exclusively to print publication or existing sort of on this online sphere. And I don't think it's a question of quality. I think the best work that is available on for Affinity or SoFurry is up there with the best work that's in print. I think probably the average, you know, the average print work at least has gone through editing passes that kind of make it a little bit better in terms of a bare minimum. But I don't think it's a question of quality. I think it's really a question of audience and a question of motivation. And I think the trick probably to getting more people engaged and to tapping into the reader engagement that really drives this community. Because when you look at it, this is a community that's a deeply creative community. The vast majority of people who are in the fandom are in it for creative purposes. It's really a shame that we have not been able to find a way to motivate people to provide feedback and to respond to what we see in print to the same degree that, that they do when there's a quick, easy mechanism for feedback on any of the major websites.
Right, yeah, and let me clarify. It's not that we get no feedback. It's just that there was a story I posted 5 months ago that got its first comment tonight. And whereas 5 years ago, the same story with the same amount of views would have had approximately 10 to 15 comments by this time.
I do wonder sometimes if, partially in the last several years, there's been kind of an inundation where people don't allow themselves time to write an actual critique, even if it's a short comment, because they're reading a thing, they're enjoying it, and then they have to go on Twitter and catch up on Twitter, then they have to go to Facebook, catch up on Facebook, then they have to go to Telegram, see if anyone sent them any messages. I don't know how Telegram works yet, so if I'm getting it wrong, whatever. But there are so many social media things to keep up with now. I almost wonder sometimes if that's part of the thing, if people just, they suddenly move on to something else, and by the time they even would think of leaving a review for what they just read, it's bedtime.
The U shiny syndrome. Absolutely.
Yeah, no, I think you're right, and that's—I don't know how you solve that. That's a huge—that's a social problem. Yeah. That is not a furry problem.
I did a little experiment, and it's been a while. When I started working through like some of my backlog, because I pick up the books, and then you know they sort of gather in a mass on a shelf, and I start pulling them off and reading them, When Roar 5 came out last year, we bought it, and I started reading it. Like, I would read a story or two as I was laying in bed, which I haven't done for years. Like, unless I'm like reading it on a tablet, because I don't have a good nightlight for the reading. And as I read a story, I actually concisely reviewed that story in a tweet. Like just an overall impression of the story, like the thing that struck me about that story. And usually I would mention I would mention the author, and if I had room in the tweet I would mention, you know, Ian Roar 5 from For Planet, but usually I didn't have that room, so I would get the author, and you know, I would do it in two tweets. But and those tweets got quite a few retweets and favorites, and not just from the authors. So I don't know if I don't know if anybody's going to go to that effort, but like the average reader. But
so the furry fandom is predominantly visual in its art form. Well, we've gone from text to being predominantly visual. We started out as text, we were very visual, and that's actually something that writers are constantly struggling against. Is we are not an instant gratification.
We're even not even noticed a lot of the time.
Yeah.
I think I've told you about this, is that there's been a furry pamphlet, quote unquote, going around. It's three pages online. It's three pictures that are informing you about, oh, this is what the furry fandom is. This is what they do. And it's been constantly pointed to me, have you seen this? Because someone has taken the picture of Ocean, and he is on the third panel. So if you've seen this, you'll know because you've seen my picture. And so it's my picture of Ocean that I specifically commissioned from Salen. I'm like, I don't have a picture of Ocean writing. And so she's got him with his tablet, and I love it. And so you have a picture of a furry writing on the pamphlet, and yet there is nothing on that pamphlet at all about furry literature as part of our culture.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, we are not instant gratification. And so I very much understand your comment. One of the stories in Fang 6 actually was on furry affinity, was taken down so it could be submitted and published.
Right. Yeah.
That contributes to the lack of commentary and the lack of publication. And then there are other things that come up in general where we kind of flood the markets when we think about it. Because our publishers, we have a lot coming out, but we're not instant gratification, so it takes people time to get through it. And people like to collect sets, but they don't always like to do anything with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's part of our problem as well, is
The number of writers, the sheer number of writers has exploded as well.
The problem is the sheer number of quality writers has not exploded at the same rate. And with the advent of self-publishing, we have a problem where things that are filling the market that really are counterproductive to the to a positive image growth. I cannot tell you the sheer number of pieces that are, I look for self-published work because I'm amused. And back from my editor days with large publishing, so I'm wondering, how do you people even pass grade school anymore with some of the stuff where people are self-publishing and selling? And it hurts our overall images for all the work and all the hard, all the effort we put into actually going through Fur Planet and going through Silver Wolf and working with Rabbit Valley to get those things out. It's kind of undermined by the explosion of, I'd say mediocre, but that's about where it's at, is the mediocre writers and the new writers who are kind of absorbing a lot of the light from people who have put the time into their craft and have really have work to be printed. I know it's a horrible thing to say, and it sounds horribly elitist to everyone listening. It's true.
Well, and it's not even so much elitist. It's about, no matter how you're offering something as a product for pay, whether it's through a publisher or there is something to be said for the act of self-publishing, in that it allows something that only has a small audience to still find that audience. But it still needs the effort. It still needs the editing. It still needs the, if you can't do it yourself, you need to pay someone to do it, or at least ask a friend to do it. And not putting in that effort, if that's the first thing someone pays money for, that is that particular genre of fiction, and leaves a bad taste in their mouth, they won't go and buy the quality stuff because they'll assume it's all bad.
So real quick though, exception to the self-publishing thing, Micah Hogarth.
And Jesse E. Owen.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There are exceptions. I'm referring to them.
Jess, and we've talked to her on the podcast before, has stated like she hires an editor, and she's very happy with their work, and they've gone through, and that's one of the things that has helped her a lot.
Same with Micah. Micah either does it or hires someone else for editing, for like a, here, someone other than me read this.
I don't know if she hires them so much as she's got enough very dedicated fans who are willing to do it for her.
They're bribed.
I don't know. And however it happens, whether you are paying your proofreader / editor, or whether it's just a simple matter of they are so ecstatic to get a pre-reading copy, an early advanced copy, that they do it for you, either way, get someone to do it.
I've seen from really good self-published authors, I've still seen some sadly disappointing grammatical errors in their books. Mm. I'm not saying it's a common thing, but I've caught a few where it's like, oh, you have such a good book, and it's really brilliant, but even though I know they've done a lot of work and worked with editors, sometimes things do slip through. It's harder to get those extra checks that a publishing house has,
And even then, publishers don't like to admit this. We can open any book that was sold today, the last 3 days. I guarantee you, every single book we will find at least 5 errors per chapter.
Mm-hmm. And that's not just furry publishers. That's big name publishers. Yeah. Any book from any subsidiary of Random House, Tor, whatever. Somewhere in there is a typo that just didn't get caught because there's so many things to do.
And speaking of self-published authors who have made grammatical mistakes, I released a novel called Light, A Tale of the Creatures of Zudokai, and Fred pointed out, well, there's some issues here that slipped through the cracks. I did have somebody edit it for me. I was like, I tried to cheap out and go, oh, we can give you a physical copy. I'm like, I should probably do that and read through it first. And then I was like, I don't really have the money right now, but okay, well, all right, we'll just give it a shot. Bad idea. Not going to do that again. But, so, for anyone here, I guess I'm losing my train of thought. But, yeah, so, to me, Fred made the review. My reply to that review is, you're right, that's not acceptable. If there's grammatical bugs in there that's ruining the immersion, those need to be fixed, and I need to fix it. And just so exclusive to this podcast, I'm going to make this announcement, is that I'm going to be offering free copies, digital copies, after I make a revision and put that back out there. I think it's the same thing in the gaming industry, where it's like where indie people just put out a bunch of garbage onto Steam or whatever.
That's kind of similar to, you know, the self-publishing thing here. And it affects indie people who work really hard at their talents and actually provide really good content. It's the same thing here, and there's indie people who go, oh, but I'm just an indie guy. You know, I don't have to be held to the same standards as everyone else. But, you know, but there's other indie people who's like, yep, you're right. I have to fix what I have to do, and that's what we got to do.
For the love of God, people pay us. No, I actually was teaching, I know it's not related to writing, I was teaching a chainmail and scalemail construction panel, and I hopped up on my soapbox for about 5 minutes to scream at people politely that artisans, writers, and artists are not paid correctly. Writers especially, we are paid even worse. We have
such a low pay rate.
Bottom rung, absolutely.
Like, half a cent a word is just laughable in most other markets.
Yeah, but this is in general that our time is basically considered to have no value. And because editing is a painstaking, grueling process.
And here's the other thing I want to say about that. Since it's probably, if you're listening to this, you are somewhere along the spectrum of writer or editor who wants to, if you want to be paid at all or paid better for your work, you are partially responsible for holding the line on that. It will not change unless you start to tell people, if you want my stuff, you have to pay in some way. Whether that is through a publisher, whether that is, again, if you're going the self-published route, like we just said, you have to do all your editing, but you have to be the one to start the expectation for yourself and all the other writers out there that, yes, our time is valuable, yes, we deserve to get paid.
Yeah, the starting salary for an editor at a large publisher, Delray, for a copy editor, starting salary is over $60,000 a year.
Yeah, I'm well aware of that. I've been submitting resumes. Haven't got any responses yet.
For slush editors, people who decide to crush your career and destroy your hopes and dreams, I love being one of those. Our salaries were a little higher. Little. We had six-figure salaries because our burnout rate was 3 to 6 months. Well, you can only crush so many people's dreams before really you have no soul. This is why I don't have one. But in the freelance world, I remember Giannis actually. Giannis, what is yours? Per 250 word page, $4 a page?
That's the rate that I've never actually been paid, but it certainly would be.
That's if you convert a professional copy editor's salary for like entry level, that's about $4 every 250 page words.
Yeah.
That's the actual rate, that's about what the rate should be. Most small press publishers, honestly, they operate on very thin margins, can't afford that rate.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'll just be honest, I won't use that. But there is a point of our small markets to help them grow. Yes, you have to make some hits on your personal amount of money you're going to make in your margin. That doesn't mean you discount your work entirely. It's about negotiating and working best.
I think we got to end it there, though.
Yeah, okay. It's funny. I think we said we were going to end about 45 minutes ago.
Yeah, we did.
And we've gotten really melancholy.
I have to go catch a plane in the morning early, so I have to leave.
This is the magic of podcasting and shit writers say, and just getting. This is why we love to do it, because you know we could just sit here honestly for hours, probably continuing talking about this.
Though admittedly, we did go melancholy, but at least we started to get into a rallying cry.
We've gone up and down a few times tonight. So.
Writers, take up your pens and follow me to profitability!
So guys,
lead on.
Thank you. Thank you again for...
I didn't mean to take over. Sorry.
Thank you guys for coming.
And thank you all for listening to Shit Writer Say.
The more
this
you
one
know.
Was actually decently clean compared to others.
I think it's the public lobby. So.
Yeah.
I think I've actually sworn more on this than anyone else, and just from saying shit writer say.
Would you like to add a couple extra choice words that he can cut?
No.
Oh,
and end. Thank you.
we fill the dead space while they hug.
Yes.
Aww. It's called Mark.
Oh, okay. I'm here until like halfway through tomorrow, so those
Mark.
Oh, okay.
Mark. If it wasn't so much work, I would actually just go get every mark we've ever had and just string it into some long compilation. Finds like see Pepper Coyote. Could you just like remix this or something? You know,
that'd just be awesome.
I don't know.
Sound like Pogo doing one of his
remixes. Yeah. Mark, just Mark. 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 Mark.
Sorry.